over digital ID cards. Only in September, Sir Keir Starmer said...
You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID. It's as simple as that.
No, it's not, as it's scrapped. To Kent.
Day five of this water outage blighting the south of England. I'm Ben Jihia, back in Tunbridge Wells, where the crisis shows no sign of abating.
Plus, to the north, and it would appear to be on the right tracks, as the Northern Powerhouse Rail will finally deliver, particularly for lines that go across the country rather than up and down. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the government has dropped plans to make workers sign up for digital ID to work in the UK. Some of the people will instead be able to use other documents, as such as a passport. The Conservatives say it marks another U-turn by Labour. LBC's deputy political editor, Aggie Chambray, is following developments.
Plans for the mandatory digital ID cards for workers. Basically, that part of it could be ditched, but Number 10 still saying they will still have compulsory digital right to works checks. And they basically think that the conversation was getting overrun with the idea of what those digital ID cards would look like. And so they are ditching, it seems, that part of it.
President Trump has warned of a very strong response if Iranian authorities kill arrested anti-government protesters. The family of one man, 26-year-old Efran Soltani, have been told that he'll be executed today. Human rights groups say the death toll in the demonstrations is now at least 2,500. Initial plans have been revealed to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for the project. It'll come after major rail upgrades across the north of England, including east-to-west connections. New analysis by LBC has found councils spent more than £150 million last year on court cases against parents of children with special needs. Local authorities in England and Wales lost 99% of the cases at SEND tribunals. They allow parents to challenge aspects of their child's care plan. Sharon, whose name we've changed, was left with a bill of £25,000.
You are literally treading water, hemorrhaging money. It felt like the LA were trying to break us financially, psychologically. The whole process was supposed to take 20 weeks. And at that point, we were at 91 weeks. And that's having gone through tribunal, cruising towards another one. It was such a challenging time. You were made to feel gaslit.
The Department for Education says it'll set out system reforms later this year. And Manchester City are in control of their League Cup semi-final against Newcastle. They won 2-0 in the first leg at St James's Park last night. Chelsea face Arsenal tonight in the other last four tie. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,137. It closed down three yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast, dry and breezy elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Aldi can't save you from that 6 a.m. boot camp.
Drop and give me 50!
But they can save you a healthy amount on this Greek yogurt. Hiye Total Greek Yogurt is £3.75 at Tesco, but Aldi's is just £1.99. Aldi, always finding ways to save.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Wednesday, January the 14th. Hang on. Help is on the way. That's the message from Donald Trump to those protesters. This as conservative estimates now of the number of people who've been killed by the Iranian regime put it at north of 2,000. And executions without any form of trial due to begin today, and allowing for the fact that time-wise they are ahead of us when they say due to begin this morning. Tragically, they might have already started. Let's come back home. News in the UK.
What do commuters think about the government's promise to build a new railway line between Manchester and Birmingham? And do they think it'll actually happen? I'm LBC's Liam Gotting at Manchester Piccadilly.
I think we're at a dozen, or it might be 13 U-turns with this government now. Here's Alex Norris, the Minister for Border Security and Asylum, speaking with me less than 24 hours ago.
Digital ideas, absolutely.
When will that be online, do we think?
That's coming in by the end of this parliament. And that is, you know, at its most important, digital ID will be to make sure people have the right to work.
And now that's to be scrapped. It will not be compulsory. Talk about one hand not knowing what the other hand's doing, or whatever that expression is. We're trying to get to more detail of that. Plus, do you remember how the Met Police wanted officers to declare if they have links with Masons, with Freemasons? Well, they have. So what action will be taken now? And the TikTok sensation, where it would appear, Gen Zers are looking back at this year. I live my day as if it was the last. Live my day as if it was no past. Doing it all night. Well, now you can be nostalgic for 2016, when some of us can be nostalgic for the 80s is beyond me. But 2016 was a great year. Leicester City won the Premier League as well. We'll look at that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With the sort of bravery that you can only marvel at, the protests have continued. And now the Iranian protesters are told that help is on the way. Here's a speech made by President Trump last night in Detroit.
Keep protesting. Take over your institutions, if possible. And save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused. And I've canceled all meetings with the Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. And all I say to them is help is on its way. You saw that I put tariffs on anybody doing business with Iran. Just went into effect today. And I say make Iran great again. You know, it was a great country until these monsters came in and took it over.
It's not clear what help means, but his intervention comes as an Iranian man is set to be the first victim executed by the government today. 26-year-old Irfan Soltani will be allowed just 10 minutes with his family before he's hanged this morning for allegedly taking part in an anti-government protest last Thursday. Some reports say all he did was shout some protest slogans. President Trump also spoke with CBS News last night and was asked by a journalist, Tony DeCoupel, if hanging would cross the red line.
Well, now we're hearing that they're going to start hanging protesters tomorrow. So it comes back to the question, have they crossed your red line or has the line moved?
I haven't heard about the hanging. If they hang them, you're going to see some things that I don't know what your where you come from and what your thought process is, but you'll perhaps be very happy.
What do you mean by that?
We will take very strong action. If they do such a thing, we will take very strong action.
First, let's go to Christiane Amanpour, who's a British-Iranian journalist, chief international anchor for CNN, and hosts the global podcast. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with her ex, Jamie Rubin. Now, some of my listeners will not be aware, of course, that you have background here, that you spent, I think, the formative years of your life. Just tell my listeners, Christiane, about that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, certainly. I was raised in Iran by an Iranian father and a British mother, stayed there pretty much as home for the entirety of my adulthood, my adolescence, until I left literally 47 years ago, about now, just as the Shah's regime was falling to the Ayatollahs. The revolution of the Islamic Republic took place at about this time in 1979, and the Shah was forced out, and Ayatollah Khomeini came back, and this is where we are now, 47 years later. In my opinion and my reporting there over the years of this revolution, I have noticed protests. I've been covering protests there. And this is the one that certainly is the biggest and most sustained and the bloodiest that we have witnessed. And, you know, the Iranian people have been demonstrating and protesting and marching and voting for their freedom for the better part of half a century now since this revolution. And as you mentioned, it's now 1 week into a full internet blackout with very little chinks of light and ability to really understand or know what's going on. that videos are coming up, word is getting out, pictures are emerging. We are hearing, you know, about rivers of blood, according to one doctor in one of the emergency hospitals, health system almost buckling because they've never seen this amount. One called it a mass casualty event. I know from people who we've been able to reach inside that some of the so-called Basij, which are the foot soldiers of the Islamic Republican Guard, they have been trolling around, as they often do, on motorcycles and waving automatic weapons. I've heard the word Kalashnikov, and we've heard the sound of automatic weapons, and we've seen the pictures of those big weapons being faced off against a crowd. We also know that there have been security forces killed as well. So this is the biggest, the most sustained, and the most consequential demonstration since the Mahsa Amini demonstrations, which was called Woman Life Freedom, when she was killed or died in the custody of Iranian police. And back when I was there in 2009, a massive political uprising when people deemed that their election had been stolen, and the old, president, his name was Ahmadinejad, took power again. Those were crushed.
Let me ask you, Christiane, Donald Trump talks about, quotes, help. What do you think that help should look like?
Honestly, I really don't know. It's not up to me to say what it should look like, but I will tell you one thing, that for 47 years of this revolution, not one leader, and I will say this, has really concentrated on the human rights of the Iranian people. The Western and the regional politics, the Israeli politics, whatever you might want to call it, have focused entirely on security, i.e. nuclear, terrorism, missiles. They have not made a priority of the human rights of the Iranian people. In the meantime, President Trump says this and that. We'll wait to see what actually happens and what might happen as a result. But his administration has cut off vital links to the Iranian people by their assault on VOA and Radio Free This and Radio Free That. It's incredibly important to support the Iranian people as a Western democratic principle. And apart from a little bit of, you know, lip service, that has not been the main principle of Western policy towards a regime that they call monstrous, as you just said.
Christiane, I must leave it there. You know, for broadcast reasons, only for time purposes, I have to say farewell. But you can hear more of Christiane Amanpour on the Global Podcast. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with her ex, Jamie Rubin. Christiane is, of course, chief international anchor for CNN as well. Thank you for that, Christiane. 11 after 7. Let's turn to Laleh Tangziri, who is an Iranian human rights activist. Do you mind if I ask by, and I hope I doesn't distress you, do you have family or friends still in Iran? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me. I do have family and friends in Iran, and I am very distressed about the situation.
Have you been able to make contact with them? And if so, what are they saying?
Until last night, we hadn't heard anything from any family members. My aunt in Belgium had a phone call from somebody in Canada, right. And they said that my family is fine. But, you know, we didn't know who the caller is. It was somebody who's left Iran, probably through Dubai, and just send a message that our family is fine.
Can you give my listeners an idea, a sense of the bravery that would be required to continue with these protests in Iran?
The bravery is enormous. It's never been like this. People are not feared anymore for this regime. They are not feared for their bullets and for what they are doing, for the killing, being hanged from the cranes, nothing. They are chanting, we want Iran without mullahs. We want Prince Reza Pahlavi, and long live the king. And I'm so sorry that in the past, we've had journalists, we have politicians, we've had human rights advocates and essentially fake activists trying to have an appeasement policy. I mean, the former journalist that you had on your show, Mrs. Amanpour, for years, she tried to speak to this government, to this regime. And excuse me, how could you appease with terrorists? How could you...
Well, I'm sure Christiane wouldn't have appeased them. I've little doubt about that. She'd have wanted to ask some pretty tough questions, because I've been watching her work for some years. President Trump says help is on the way. Laleh, what should that help look like in your book?
Pardon?
What should that help be? When Trump says help is on the way, what should that help be?
They should put some force on the regime. Sanctions has not been enough. They haven't really put true sanctions on them. They expel all the diplomats, shut down all these terror houses, which are named Iranian embassies. It's enough. Be the voice of Iran. Implement sanctions. Send their kids back to Iran. Why should they deserve live in democratic countries when the children and kids in Iran are being shot dead?
Ale Tangziri, thank you. I'm glad you've heard from your family. Very trying times. Thank you for your input. I have to move on to get to a news bulletin, but we will take your calls on that. What should help look like? And if those executions have gone ahead, I remind you there, they talk about executions in the morning. They are a couple of hours ahead of us here. They could have already happened. What does the UK need to do? And coming back to the UK, news here.
Day 5 of this water outage blighting the south of England. I'm Benji Hyer, back in Tunbridge Wells, where the crisis shows no sign of abating.
Plus, after nearly 100 years of dominance, the BBC is overtaken by what form of broadcast or streaming service? I'll tell you later in the show. 7:15 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The government has dropped plans to make digital ID mandatory for people wanting to work in the UK. Donald Trump has warned of a very strong response if Iranian authorities kill anti-government protesters. And ministers have announced initial plans for major rail upgrades across the north of England. LBC weather cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast, dry and breezy elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M3 northbound up to Junction 3 at Lightwater. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier. There are severe delays on the approach. Also, problems on the M11 southbound at Junction 5 at Loughton. A car's broken down just after the junction, so that's causing queues. On the Marylebone Road eastbound at Baker Street, a lorry's just broken down, so one lane is closed, and that's very busy on the approach. On the trains, Great Western Railway and Elizabeth Line services are delayed between Paddington and Reading. That was after a signal failure from earlier. And the Windrush line is back up and running now between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction.
This is LBC.
This Wednesday, the Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. Little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
18 after 7. Morning, if you're just joining us, we're talking about that assurance. Is that the word? A pledge, a promise from Donald Trump. Kimia, you're going to be the next caller. I understand you are of Iranian origin, so interesting to hear what you have to say. Just quickly telling you about some of the front pages. It is front page news, not all of the papers. The Daily Telegraph picking up on that line. Trump, help is on the way. The Guardian, same theme, really. Help is on the way. Trump calls on Iran's protesters to remain defiant. The big domestic story, One that we will look at later in the show, I promise you. Now, digital ID cards will not be compulsory. Front page of the Daily Mail and the front page of the Times. New Starmer U-turn over compulsory digital ID. I think it's the 12th. It might be the 13th U-turn. They almost U-turn at the rate of about one a month. And as recently as yesterday, less than 24 hours ago, a government was telling us how important they were. The LBC app has the latest from Iran as well. Trump warning of very strong action. And let's take one other story from one of the websites completely at random, and it's The Sun. And the website is reporting that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor will be evicted from Royal Lodge home by his birthday next month and move to a much smaller, what's called Marsh Farm, out of the Royal Lodge, in to Marsh Farm. And they have pictures, aerial pictures of both the properties. Let's get to Kimia in Brighton. Now, you are born Iranian, or you have Iranian origin. What exactly is it? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I am. I was born in Iran. I grew up in Iran. Half of my life I've been outside.
Okay.
I guess this is very common in between us Iranians, because no one was able to live in Iran, unfortunately. No one was able to stay in the country that we were born in. And I guess that is why we're trying to get our voice to the world, because
How old were you when you left, Kimia?
For the first time that we left, I was 4. And I went back when I was 14.
How long did you stay when you were a teenager?
When I was a teenager, I stayed for all of my middle school and high school years.
What were they like? So, what were your years? Were you in Tehran?
Yes, okay. I was in Tehran. They were terrible. Compared to someone who lives here, it's unexplainable. No one understands the hardships. What I see now makes me think back to those years and how I found it normal when I was living in Iran and did not consider that others outside of my country were living very differently.
Use the word terrible. Just expand a little bit on that. In what way terrible?
In the fact that even me going to a mall with my friends was a risk, because I had friends that the morality police at that time, when I was 14, would take them because they did not have a shawl around their neck. And they were 14 years old.
What would happen to them, those girls?
I had many, many friends,
yes.
Who would go and who would get caught. They would be taken to the police station, constantly be kept until their parents had to call in, come in person, write a letter promising that these kids are never going to do this again. And they would keep those letters with their names, with their images.
Good grief. And what happened if
with
a girl
images.
Did... What would happen to a girl if she was caught doing it a second or third time, Kimia?
Well, it gets more intense. They go into... So the first time they might release you on the day. The second time they'll keep you for a week. The third time, once they find out that this has become a trend... That's when these people go into prison. That's why our prisons in Iran are not full of criminals. They're full of people who just try to stand up for their rights.
Have you got friends and family there now? And if so, have you been able to...
My immediate family is in Iran.
Have you had any contact? Are they in Tehran? And have you had any contact with them? Or do you not want to say where they are?
I did not. I lost contact with them on Thursday. And I've been trying to call them in many ways that I possibly can, just to see if they're okay. No contact whatsoever from my end. But yesterday morning, they were able to give me a 4-minute call, just saying that they were fine.
And what did they say about the situation in the streets outside where
they can't say anything. That's the thing. They can't. Their phones are being constantly monitored. When I ask my parents, I'm like, are you okay? She's like, let's not talk about that. Are you fine?
Oh, good gracious. So she just asks how you're doing in Brighton, and you can't ask how she's doing in Iran.
Yes.
How ridiculous.
And I had a friend of mine whose mother went to the airport in Iran to give travelers a letter and her daughter's phone number so that people can come outside of Iran and contact her and say, your parents are fine.
Oh, my goodness. Can I ask you something?
This is what we're going through.
Kimmy, I'm going to ask you what I've asked my other contributors today, which is Donald Trump talks about help. what do you think that help should look like? What should it be?
See, we're talking about a country that is not normal. So I understand the perspective that Westerners, or I say Westerners because I consider Iran very separate from the rest of the world. And this side of the world considers Iran to be a normal country where the government can just be spoken to and they will listen to your needs and they will... It's not that. Iran is ruled by a extremist regime whose ideologies are the only thing that's important to them. And right now, there is no way for our people to stand up in front of this regime. They are armed to the gun.
Yep.
Our people have nothing. They don't even have...
Well, they have extraordinary bravery, Kimia.
I was about to say, that's the only thing our people have. And I'm sorry, but that's not enough.
Kimmy, will you stay in touch? I have to move on again because we have other stories to cover. But please stay in touch and let me know how you get on. And thank you for sharing what it would be like, what it was like to be a teenage girl growing up in Tehran with other girlfriends who used to get arrested. My goodness. Kimmy, thank you. Be well. I appreciate you. You must have trouble sleeping at night. Horrific what you're going through, and even worse, of course, for your family back in Iran. Kimmy, thank you. 7:25. We need to come to events in the UK. And it is believed now there's around 45,000 households without water in parts of Kent and Sussex. This is courtesy of South East Water. And now schools are being forced to close. LBC's reporter Benji High has gone back. He's angry again in Tunbridge Wells and he joins me now. Benji, good morning.
Nick, good morning. This disruption rolls on now into its fifth day. Still thousands of people without water across the south of England, or at very least they're living with uncertainty about whether their flow or their trickle will dry out again soon. And as a sign of the magnitude of this crisis, and a hark back to the wartime era, the local MP, Mike Martin, is recommending his constituents prepare for rationing.
There won't be a resolution until at least this weekend, and I'm pushing them very hard to institute water rationing so that we have water for set hours during the day, and then, you know, asking people to use as little as possible, because that's the only way that we're going to get the system recharged and move back onto stable supply.
That on-again, off-again situation is not welcome news for people like Charlotte of Tunbridge Wells, who has her water supply back, Nick. But for how long?
I've got a little five-month-old baby, and it was a nightmare. My water has gone off twice, and it's just the uncertainty of it all. I'm kind of washing up everything I have as I go along in fear that it's going to go off. I'm doing my washing religiously to make sure I'm on top of it so that I don't have it piling up. What's happening as well is when it is coming on everywhere, everybody's panicking and using it. So it's kind of like a vicious circle, and it's just no end in sight, really.
Others even aren't that lucky. Single mum of two, Helen, who we spoke to yesterday, her water returned with very low pressure. It then went off again, leaving her to look after her kids in a highly undignified fashion. The same applies to another lady I'm visiting later, Michelle, fresh from a knee replacement, caring for her husband with dementia. How on earth, Nick, is she meant to get herself to the bottled water distribution centres when they reopen? In fact, a lot of people might struggle to do that because, in a stunning twist of irony, there was a flood alert put in place here following heavy rainfall yesterday, despite the water shortage. And it was the weather that South East Water claims, which caused this most recent outage. But as we reported on your programme, this is not an isolated incident. It's happened before in recent weeks, in recent years as well. The water company has apologised. It says it's working hard to fix the problems, but it could take a while because the pipes need to be refilled carefully to avoid bursting again. In the meantime, the Drinking Water Inspectorate, that's part of DEFRA, it's opened an investigation. Ofwat, the regulator's considering further action, and we learned that the leadership of South East Water will be hauled back in front of MPs after the Environment Select Committee found inconsistencies in evidence that the CEO, Dave Hinton, gave to Parliament. Unfortunately for South East Water boss Dave Hinton, more politicians now joining the chorus of those demanding his resignation, including Reform leader Nigel Farage and Kent County Council leader Lyndon Kenkaran of the same party. She told Tom Swarbrick that heads must roll.
I think he's clearly not up to the job, and it's evident that South East Water has not been investing in the vital infrastructure, the pipes, the pumping stations. All of those are failing. They know they're failing. That's what caused the outage in Tunbridge Wells before Christmas, and that's what's caused the outage now. They're trying to blame it on the weather. For goodness sake, we live in England. They need to be resilient.
Lyndon Kemp-Caron has suggested calling in the military to assist. South East Water, by the way, Nick, has commissioned a review be undertaken by one of its own non-executive directors. So effectively it will mark its own homework. Maybe it'll give itself an 8 out of 10 like Dave Hinton did. A company's asked for £300 million of funding to help it to improve. Speaking of money, just briefly, Mike Martin, the MP, he's urging the chair of NatWest, which is a major investor in South East Water, to intervene. And he's pushing for compensation for those businesses that have experienced a huge loss of trade during this period of intermittent service, which could continue for days.
LBC's Benji High reporting in and among the anger of Tunbridge Wells. Let's tell you a little bit more about South East Water. It's run by a consortium of foreign infrastructure funds, has hundreds of leaks that lose around 100 million litres each day, and it stated it aims to halve the leaks by 2050. That's 24 years away. As Benji High said, they say that Storm Goretti burst mains due to freezing weather and lost power at pumping plants. We had an idea, what do you imagine how they are coping at their offices? And indeed at David Hinton, the man who gave himself an 8 out of 10 grade. Are they without water? So we put that to them. Well, we know their offices are in Snodland, near Maidstone. They've got water. We believe that Mr. Hinton lives somewhere in the Farnham area, and we asked whether he still got water. They declined to tell us, but they didn't tell us we were wrong. So if you're listening in Tunbridge Wells or any of those other parts of Kent and Sussex, don't worry, they've got the water that they need at their offices. The boss who gave himself out of 10 have got water. Meanwhile, you're having to boil water or do whatever you are if you look after babies, elderly, whatever it might be. Absolutely shameful. After the news.
A cowboy roofer who hit and killed a woman in his van on a golf course while escaping from the police has been jailed. I'm LBC's Luke Shanahan with the latest.
Plus, after nearly a century of dominance, the game's up for the BBC. They've been overtaken by what rival broadcaster or streaming service? I'll tell you after this. Just turned 7:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news, Dominic Ellis.
The government has abandoned plans to make digital ID mandatory for people wanting to work in the UK. Workers will be able to use other documents, such as passports, instead. Human rights groups say the death toll in the protests in Iran is now at least 2,500. President Trump has urged Iranians to keep demonstrating against the regime, saying help is on its way. And initial plans have been announced for major rail upgrades across the north of England. Timings and the budget for the Northern Powerhouse Rail project are yet to be released. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast today. Dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
Last week, the government signalled it would U-turn on the revaluation of business rates for pubs, an idea that I now see the business secretary has admitted that the government had no idea about the implications of it when they announced that rates would go up, which is an absolutely staggering admission of incompetence. They are saying out loud that they don't know what they're doing.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotaforguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, we'll come back to our conversation, your views on Iran, coming up later in the show, later in this hour. Indeed, we'll get into more details. Finally, on track, the Northern Powerhouse, it's the rail deal, the real deal, and we're hearing from the Transport Secretary about that. But let's stay with Iran and what it's doing to the markets and the city. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, joins me now. What's happening with the oil price? Morning, Christian.
Good morning, Nick. Well, there has been a little bit of a tick up, about 2% in the price of US crude oil. It rose about 2.7%. yesterday at market close. Brent performing in a similar direction. It's understandable. Of course, the world is now watching and waiting to see what Donald Trump meant when he told the Iranian protesters, the Iranian people, that help is on its way. Now, that might mean some sort of cyber intervention. It could mean a more, what they call kinetic military intervention. And we know also that he has announced, if not activated, those 25% tariffs on anybody doing business with Iran. That has sparked some concern at China's table, for sure. Debate now about whether China might be exempt from that, whether these are actually going to be implemented, or is it just another Trump post on social media? There is a big risk premium priced in already to the price of oil at the moment. What people are mostly worried about is whether a wider conflict and Iran's response to it, anything affecting the Strait of Hormuz, for example, if that were to be closed or mined or made impassable, could be a 20% spike in oil prices there. There is a ceiling that analysts have put on. Wider regional escalation could take the prices back up north of $100 a barrel, but caps around a more contained conflict could see around $75, $80 a barrel. But as I say, about $61, $62 now, because the world is watching and waiting.
Right. Remind the listeners about the war of words between Jay Powell and Donald Trump and how that's moving on.
Jay Powell, the chairman of the US Federal Reserve, the American Andrew Bailey, the head of their central bank, critically an independent entity which has been setting interest rates in the US regardless of what Donald Trump has been telling them to do. That's how it works in civilized economies. Donald Trump has got increasingly frustrated with him, and a criminal investigation has been launched into Jay Powell, ostensibly to do with some evidence he gave to Congress about a building project at the Federal Reserve headquarters. Now, Jay Powell came out in an extraordinary video statement and said, "This is a politically motivated attack on my independence." And we have now seen central bank governors from around the world rallying to Jay Powell's defense. So in a statement, an extraordinary, unusual joint intervention, 11 central banking chiefs, including London's central bank governor Andrew Bailey, and European equivalents, and indeed from as far away as Canada and Korea, have all said that it is critical to preserve the independence of central banks, the rule of law and democratic accountability. Donald Trump, for his part, said when asked about all of this, that Jay Powell was either not very good at building buildings or he's crooked. Well, Jay Powell and his friends in central banking dispute that. He is leaving in May. We do expect he will be replaced by somebody more aligned with the president's thinking.
Let's talk about pain at the pumps. And I'm not talking petrol. I'm talking beer. What's happening there?
I'm afraid so. I mean, as we've long discussed and as we all well know, pubs, along with the rest of the hospitality sector, but pubs are facing a particularly difficult time at the moment. And it's not just about the business rates that are keeping them up at night. Their cost bases just seem to go up and up. Of course, they have to contend with inflation. They have to contend with increases in their energy costs and their wage bills. And they've also got to navigate taxes on alcohol, which are also going up. So people might start to notice this if they haven't already in some of their local pubs. Guinness maker Diageo is going to put its own cost of a pint of Guinness up by 4 pence from April because it says it's got to manage rising costs. And other brewers are actually lowering the alcohol content in a way to keep their beers down below a new level of taxation that will kick in on higher alcohol rates. So that's Guinness going up 4 pence, alcohol content being reduced by the likes of Hophead and Foster's, and other price rises that we know are going to hit booze like San Miguel or Smirnoff, other pints at the pump. So even if the government come to the rescue of pubs and undo the mess they've made of their business rate environment, there are still plenty of other cost factors in play.
A pint of Smirnoff? I know you like a lunchtime drink, Christian, but by God, even by my standards, that's going something. Right, after nearly a century of dominance, the BBC had been beaten by Christian.
Well, I suppose there are two, if not more, types of people in the world, Nick. Maybe YouTube, for you, is simply something which you might watch a clip of something on your phone once you've got through the adverts.
Yes.
But for many other people, YouTube has become no different to Netflix or Amazon. They subscribe, there are no adverts, and they watch it on their TV at home. It is now just one of the streaming giants. About 52 million people watch YouTube on their TVs at home towards the end of last year. Say nothing of the way in which it's consumed on laptops or their phones. And the BBC has now been overtaken by YouTube for the first time on a particular measure, a particular metric. I think it might seem a little small, but the measure of people watching 3 consecutive minutes, by that measure, YouTube attracts a larger audience than all of the BBC's channels combined. The BBC have said, we're not worried, we're doing very well on other metrics, we're totally different. But of course, they should be worried. And YouTube is now a much bigger streaming channel than the likes of ITV, for example. I know LBC has well over 1 million subscribers on its own YouTube channel. So, of course, this is something of a media revolution. And it might not be something that forms part of everybody's lives at the moment, but it is forming a part of more and more people's lives, and it will upend the economics of broadcasting.
Finally, a word, City AM looking at Keir Starmer's AI action plan. 12 months on, what have you discovered?
Well, 12 months to the day that the Prime Minister declared that he would pump artificial intelligence into the veins of the British economy, we thought it would be worth looking at how things stand. Where have we got to? Well, I suppose one of the biggest things to point out is that there is, as yet, in contrast to many other jurisdictions, no dedicated AI bill, no set piece of regulation has made its way through Parliament yet. Now, some people say that's a good thing because it's moving too fast. You can't set the guardrails on it at this stage. Other people say that it's a bit of a Wild West on the regulatory side. However, when it comes to the money, there's no doubt that the UK is pulling in some big bucks. Tens and tens of billions of pounds of active investment and pledged investment, almost all of which is coming from the private sector. We also revealed through an investigation earlier this week that data centre planning applications are up more than 60% last year. People are trying to fill old coal mines, old hotels, derelict building sites, you name it. People are trying to put data centres in them because that's the engine room, the compute power necessary for an AI revolution. So we're going to see more and more of those. So on the whole, it's a good news story because there's so much money and activity flowing into the sector, but there are big questions over the power required and reform to the national grid to power all these data centres, to power AI, and access to that central compute is a significant constraint. But it's a year to the day since the Prime Minister said he was going to really kickstart this revolution. It's not been a massive political centre of focus, but the private sector is very energised by it.
Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, thanks for all of that. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow, 7:42. Quick word from Nigel in Temple Fortune, who's been hanging on the line for some time. What do you think Donald Trump's, quotes, help, close quote, should look like? Good morning.
Well, good morning. This is a shocking unfolding story. It really is terrible here. That lady who rang up earlier about her family. It's tear-jerking. I think, first of all, Donald Trump must be very robust in his action, whether it's military or whether it's financial. No sitting on the fence, just do it.
What do you mean by military? You mean actually sending the Marines?
Well, yeah, that's a possibility, sending some form of strike force or a financial penalty. The other thing, of course, is, let's not forget, what has Keir Starmer said about this? He said virtually nothing.
Well, I note that Yvette Cooper summoned the Iranian ambassador yesterday, as if they care in Tehran about that.
Of course. Come have a nice cup of tea. The other thing, which I think is quite fascinating, I said to your co-worker who took my telephone call, where are the mass protests against the atrocities in Iran?
I know. And we talked about it yesterday. Lastly, you know how Trump managed to brilliantly seize the Venezuelan leader? I wonder if you'll get the Ayatollah.
Well, you know what, Nick? Stranger things have happened. And it's amazing, for all the Marmite love and hate for Donald Trump, he's the only person in the world at the moment who's showing any form of muscular ambition and strength to end this nasty, vicious, murderous campaign.
And I think when it comes to world leaders, Nigel, if you have people like President Xi, Putin, the Ayatollah, Maduro, you're going to need similar tough guys to take action. There's no point having Sir Keir Starmer consulting various legal texts and talking about European conventions. I'm not saying I agree with everything Trump does, because I don't. But if you've got people like Xi and Putin, you're probably going to need a Trump to counter them, aren't you? Nigel, thank you. 7:43. Let's head back to the UK and the story of a rogue roofer who killed a woman as he fled police in a van, now going to jail. LBC's Luke Shanahan reports. Luke, good morning.
Nick, good morning. Suzanne Cherry was playing golf with her husband on the 11th of April last year at Astonwood Golf Club in Staffordshire, just north of Sutton Coldfield. She must have hit a stray shot because she was looking for her ball by a stream, something any golfer can relate to, but not what happened next. When a van came driving over an embankment towards her, her husband shouting her name as a warning, but there was nothing she could do to get out of the van's way. The 52-year-old driver, John McDonald, his son and a second passenger were cowboy roofers. They'd made tens of thousands of pounds just over the last couple of months, exploiting elderly victims across the West Midlands. McDonald had just led police on a 12-minute chase, which started in Birmingham, driving on the wrong side of the road, hitting other cars and speeds of up to 70 miles an hour on residential streets, ramming a police car at least 12 times before finally turning onto the golf course and slamming the van into Suzanne. McDonald then stepped over her body as he and the two passengers tried to continue their escape on foot, leaving Suzanne's husband shouting after them, "You've killed my wife." She was taken to Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, where she died of her catastrophic injuries 4 days later, just one day before what would and should have been her 63rd birthday. McDonald admitted causing death by dangerous driving at Worcester Crown Court on Monday, and he was jailed for 13 and a half years yesterday with a concurrent sentence of 4 years for conspiracy to commit fraud. His two passengers were also jailed for fraud, sentenced to 5 years between them, Nick.
Luke Shanahan reporting. What a desperately grave story. All right, coming up after the news, finally getting the railways on track up in the north. Here's the views of some people at Manchester Piccadilly Station.
People want to go down to the south a little bit faster as well and come back a little bit faster, so I think it would benefit to open up, I suppose, more of the country to people from the north as well.
You'll hear from the Transport Secretary on that after this. Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The government has abandoned plans to make digital ID mandatory for people wanting to work in the UK. Human rights groups say the death toll in the protests in Iran is now at least 2,500. And plans for a new Birmingham to Manchester railway line have been announced. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M3 is now closed northbound between junctions 4 at Camberley and 3 at Lightwater. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier and there are severe delays on the approach. Also, queues on the M11 southbound from junction 5 at Loughton down to the North Circular Road, and that's where a car broke down earlier. Very busy on the Marylebone Road eastbound to Baker Street because a lorry has broken down. In Barons Court, Lily Road is closed both ways for emergency repair works. On the train, Southern are running a reduced service between Victoria and West Croydon because of a track problem. Great Western Railway and Elizabeth Line services are still delayed between Paddington and Reading. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Jubilee and District lines.
This is LBC.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw with your birth date, initial and a colour. And you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'll pay for that!
Is it your lucky day? Search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes for 8. Just while we wait for the Transport Secretary, let's talk about the plight of people in Kent and Sussex without any water. Now, Ollie is furious. Many places in Cornwall are on day 4 of no water. This isn't mentioned by LBC. Cornwall has had worse damage from Storm Goretti. I would point out, Ollie, remember, these people in Kent and Sussex, they were without water in the 12 days in the build-up to Christmas. Not the 12 days, but 12 days in the build-up to Christmas. 12 days, some of them, without water. Now it comes on and goes off again. So I'm not minimising, this isn't a race to the bottom. But I think we have to be aware of what they're going through in Kent and Sussex. Andrew in Saltburn says, I worked in private industry all my life. The abject failure of this operation, as in Southeast Water, would warrant immediate dismissal of the CEO. Marcus in Cranbrook, which is in Kent, close to Maidstone, joins me now. Marcus, what can you tell me? Good morning.
I can't understand the water companies in the whole of the UK don't have backup generators.
Yes, that's a good point, because Southeast Water say that, unfortunately, the Storm Goretti has knocked out their generators. That's a good point. You think they'd have some diesel ones standing by?
Yeah, water is a necessary for everyone in the UK.
Yep.
We're in the 21st century. This shouldn't happen. We pay enough in Kent for wastewater.
Right.
And we've got enough reservoirs, aquifers in Charing. I know there's a big one. And we should have generators on these. We should have running water at all times. If World War III happened and the power got knocked out, we're going to be in the same problem throughout the UK. Well, just because they don't accommodate for generators. It's not right.
I think you make a rather frightening point, because I think if something like a war, I just think so much of our infrastructure now in this country is just shot through. I just don't know that we could function, in all honesty.
It's cutting costs. Mm. It's for these big shareholders, and years ago, we used to have generators for switch rooms, for BT, and all these old stuff that have gone out because they think the power's always going to stay on. It doesn't stay on because there's always a tree that will fall down, or something major will happen. It shouldn't happen.
Lastly, are you a South East Water customer yourself, Marcus, living in Cranbrook?
Yes.
And prior to this, I imagine you're okay, because Cranbrook's not that close to Tunbridge Wells, so you're probably all right at the moment. But how would you rate their service anyway as your water company?
1, and I wouldn't pay the bill.
So no 8 out of 10 from you from them, then?
No.
All right, look after yourself, Marcus. Give thanks that you have got water. You don't realise, do you? I saw on one of the television newscasts yesterday, and indeed our reporter, Benji Hire, was with people yesterday morning prior to that broadcast that I saw. Obviously, that much more vivid when you can see it on TV, but These folk turn on the tap and nothing happens. Just nothing happens. And they've got babies or they've got elderly relatives who obviously need to be washed. They might be, you know, confined to their beds or whatever. And they've just got clothes to wash, for God's sakes. 12 days before Christmas, they were without water. Now it's happened again. And that oaf of a chief executive giving himself 8 out of 10, as you heard in Benji Hire's report, it is likely that he's going to find himself in the front of a panel of MPs again fairly soon. Well, let's hope they went for him last time. Let's hope they sharpen up their act and go for him again, because it just seems utterly indefensible. As Marcus, the caller, was saying, where's the backup generators? Something such as water is absolutely vital to sustain life. Also, of course, for health reasons. If those poor folk in Kent and Sussex, they're not able to wash themselves, they're not able to wash their clothes, they have elderly and infirm relatives, well, I don't need to tell you the risk of how disease is going to spread, do I? I know it's cold, so fortunately that will perhaps minimise it, but it's not good. Let's talk a little bit about the situation in Iran. President Trump saying help is on the way, and I'm asking what that help looks like. Mike in Crawley, a vicious regime is killing its own people, and we talk to exiles living in Britain. While I understand the desire for certain information, I have to wonder if it's wise to identify people by their names and tell the town that they live in. Imagine if it was the Second World War. Hello, Jacques French, so your parents are in the resistance and live in Rouen. Is that really the way to go? Roger in Brentwood, what you have to understand about the Iranian leadership is everything they do is considered inshallah, or translated as the will of God. Therefore, nothing we, nor the Americans, or anyone else says or threatens will have any influence on this. Same subject. Ryan in Windsor says USA and Israel know every Iranian general and all the IRGC buildings. They have to wait until the regime is about to fall and no longer in control of the thousands of missiles that could rain down on Israel and possibly other Middle Eastern states. Unfortunately, the people of Iran are on their own until this happens. Shailesh in Wembley says President Trump will not do anything substantial in Iran. Trump had a habit of supporting despots. In Venezuela, he's done a deal with the generals to get Maduro. The regime continues and remains. This is Shailesh saying he supports Putin. I don't know that we say that, but I'll go on. Trump likes to behave like a dictator, and will in some way, like the dictators of Iran, he likes strong men. Let's come back to events and stories here in the UK. And good news, it would seem, the biggest change as regards royal services in the north of England in a generation. Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander joins me now. I have to tell you, Secretary of State, that when I talk about this, I often hear from my listeners up there, their trains go up and down all the time, but they never go horizontally, they never go across. And I think you and your colleagues are putting that right. Heidi, Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on the show. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Most definitely, we are putting that right. There's an urgent need to sort out the poor train services that currently run east to west across the north of England. You know, people that live in the great cities of Liverpool, Manchester, Sheffield, Bradford, Leeds, York, Newcastle, they deserve to be able to get from one side of the country to the other, just as people who live in London can get from one side of the city to the other there. And so I think the truth of the matter is much of the north of England has got Victorian rail infrastructure. It's creaking. It's got slow trains, poor reliability and a lack of direct connections as well. So that's why in the plans that we're announcing today, we're proposing to invest in better rail services into and out of Leeds from cities like Sheffield, Bradford and York. Unlock regeneration opportunities in Leeds city centre, around York Station as well. Build a brand new railway between Liverpool and Manchester, running via Manchester Airport, which is clearly a critical connection, and also Warrington. But then also go beyond that as we move slightly more into the future to improve cross-trans Pennine services. Mm-hmm. We've got some work that's going on at the moment in places like Huddersfield, places like Church Fenton to do electrification and some upgrades. But we do need another level of ambition because, you know, this isn't just about trains. It's about unlocking regeneration in city centres. It's about attracting inward investment and businesses to come to the north of England and, you know, actually get to a point where the north of England is powering this country in the way it has done in the past. Okay. And we think it can lead the way into the future as well.
So, Secretary of State, when will the good folk of Liverpool, Warrington, Manchester, Sheffield, York, Leeds, Bradford, when will they see the first trains on the tracks?
So, construction Design work will start in the 2030s for the, yeah, look, you know, well, you will know the experience of building rail infrastructure. As much as I might like it to be faster than it is, it does take time to do this properly. Mm. Between Gordon Brown giving the go-ahead for Crossrail, which is now the Elizabeth Line, it took 15 years until those services were up and running. And we need to learn the lessons of things like HS2, because if you fail to plan properly at the beginning, you end up wasting taxpayers' money, because we were in a ludicrous situation there where the previous Conservative government was allowing HS2 to let contracts when they hadn't specified to the construction companies what they should be building. And so, of course, at that point, the construction companies, you know, see that as a bit of a, yeah, a meal ticket, really. Yeah, and so we're not going to make that, those same mistakes. And as a Labour Transport Secretary, I'm going to determine that every pound that we spend on Northern Powerhouse Rail is good value for money.
And that's what will spook possibly some of my listeners, because you rightly reference HS2, most of which the single quotes, crimes, have been committed by the previous administration. Do you know what the cost of HS2 is currently, Secretary of State?
So I've asked Mark Wilde, who's the new chief executive, to come back to me with an updated cost envelope and also a delivery schedule for when he believes that the railway can open. It's a really important piece of work that he's been doing over the last year. He's new into that role. He's a new leadership. We've got a new chair, new board members as well to bring. So,
yeah, but how much is it costing? Do you know the figure currently?
So I'm waiting literally in the next couple of weeks to get an update from him on the work that he has done.
So you don't know the cost currently? Last year.
So what I can tell you that as a country, we have spent over £50 billion on this railway, and I can tell you that we have got allocated in this spending review period, which is the next 4 years, over £20 billion to continue to invest.
But that's, you see, this is the problem. You look at something like the success of the Elizabeth Line, which has been transformational for people there. If we can repeat that with the work you've announced today, fantastic. But then you have the spectre of HS2 hanging over it, Secretary of State. You must accept that.
I do understand that people feel frustrated about HS2, and that's why we want to deliver this railway in the north of England in a different way. Mm. So we want to work with local leaders. This is not going to be some sort of central government vanity project. We will deliver it in incremental phases. You know, we've got a really successful programme that's running at the moment called the Trans-Pennine Route Upgrade. Right. It's not some massive mega project where we're trying to, you know, get the world record in terms of how fast trains are going. We're just going to deliver better services, more reliable services, cut journey times and increase the capacity, the number of seats on trains that people have. Right. And, you know, look, when you turn up at a station in the north of England, if you miss your train and another one doesn't arrive for a whole hour, then that puts people off from using train services. And that's the problem we want to tackle with setting up this turn-up-and-go railway for the north of England. It means that you don't have to faff around looking at timetables before you go to the station. You can go along to the station and be confident that a train will arrive in a reasonable timetable. So it's a really good news story for the north of England today.
Last minute or so together, can I just play something to you, Secretary of State, that we were discussing yesterday? Here's the Minister for Border Security and Asylum, your colleague Alex Norris, speaking about the importance of these new ID cards.
Digital ID is absolutely...
When will that be online, do we think?
That's coming in by the end of this Parliament. And that is, you know, at its most important, digital ID will be to make sure people have the right to work.
So that's your colleague, the Border Security Minister, yesterday, 24 hours ago, saying how important they are, and now there's been yet another U-turn. Why should my listeners believe a single thing any of your colleagues ever say?
So I need to be absolutely clear with you, Nick. We are committed to a mandatory digital right-to-work check. At the moment, these right-to-work checks are a paper-based system. There's no digital records kept. It makes it very hard to target enforcement operations against businesses that are employing illegal workers. Now, we're going to consult on the detail of it. It could be that someone could prove their right to work through the digital ID that this government will be bringing in. But it might also be, for example, that there's a scan of a biometric chip within a passport or on an e-visa.
But why would I need one then, Heidi Alexander? If I've got a new passport or I've got a driver's license, why would I need one of these digital ID cards?
Well, I think there's huge benefits that can be attached to. Well, I don't know about you, Nick. I mean, I don't carry cash and I don't carry a credit card. I do everything on my phone. And I'm often asked, have you got ID? And I'm rooting around in my bag to see whether I've got a credit card there. It would be really helpful to have digital ID on my phone.
But these were to be mandatory, Alexander. These were to be mandatory, Secretary of State, and now they're not, and it's the 13th U-turn.
So the digital right to work checks will be mandatory. I don't accept this characterisation that there's somehow been 30 U-turns that the government have done. I think that's political mischief that other political parties are, you know, seeking to put about. You know, the right to work, the digital right to work check will still be mandatory, and I can assure your listeners of that.
All right. Grateful for your time. Heidi Alexander, initially £1.1 billion to unlock much of the north of England in a £45 billion overhaul. Heidi Alexander, Sound Report Secretary, thank you for your time. We are at 3 minutes after eight. Let's get the news headlines on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government has dropped plans to make digital IDs mandatory for people wanting to work in the UK. Workers will instead be able to use other documents, such as a passport. A government spokesman said it's always been clear that full details would be set out after a public consultation. Speaking to LBC, the Liberal Democrat MP, Helen Morgan, welcomed the U-turn.
We think it's a bad idea. We said it was a bad idea to start off with. It costs a phenomenal amount of money. I think the number floating around was about £1.8 billion. We think that money would have been better put into things like providing extra beds in the NHS or maybe frontline policing. There's lots of public services that need investment.
Human rights groups say the death toll in the protests in Iran is now at least 2,500. President Trump has urged Iranians to keep protesting against the regime, saying help is on its way. Plans have been announced to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for that project. It'll come after major rail upgrades across the north of England, including east-to-west connections. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has just admitted to Nick, though, it will take time to deliver.
Construction work will start in the 2030s you will know the experience of building rail infrastructure. As much as I might like it to be faster than it is, it does take time to do this properly.
Councils spent more than £150 million last year on court cases against parents of children with special needs. Analysis by LBC has found authorities in England and Wales lost 99% of the Send Tribunal cases. They allow parents to challenge aspects of their child's care plan. The government says it'll set out reforms to the system early this year. And thousands of properties in Kent and parts of Sussex are entering a fifth day without water. The outage has been blamed on the recent cold weather. South East Water says it is working around the clock to fix the problem. In the city, the FTSE 100 had just reopened at 10,137. It closed down three yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast, dry and breezy elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply, see lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 26.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 7 minutes after eight on Wednesday, January the 14th. A little bit behind the clock after we're a little bit late getting to the Transport Secretary. We'll come back to her conversation, about trains and the rail link for the north of England. But in other news, just denied by Heidi Alexander, she says it's not a U-turn over compulsory digital ID cards. We'll lay out the facts and then take your reaction on that. Plus, here's Commissioner of the Met, London's Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, speaking with me as recently as December about the decision to force his officers to declare, are they Freemasons?
I'm not uncomfortable about Mason serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
Well, the day has dawned, sunlight has been brought to it, and they've got hundreds of them. So what happens next? In other news,
councils in England and Wales spent more than £150 million last year on court cases fighting parents of special needs children, despite losing 99% of cases. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
Plus, have you heard of the latest TikTok sensation? Possibly for Gen Zers, able now to look back. No, of course they don't look back at the 90s or anything like that. They look back with rose-tinted specs at the events of 2016. Yes, it's a TikTok sensation, pining for events of the year. Oh, such as
Premier League champions 2016, the amazing Leicester City.
As soon as they struggle to win a corner at the moment, you must allow me to celebrate those extraordinary days. Other events of 2016, well, how about the election of Donald Trump the first time and Brexit? So what makes it such a favoured year? Later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, for two newspapers, The Times, the Prime Minister has abandoned plans for mandatory digital ID for workers in the 13th significant U-turn of his premiership. For the Daily Mail, Labour forced into another humiliating U-turn last night, abandoning plans for mandatory digital IDs for workers. Not the way I have to say one Secretary of State saw it. So let's get the full background on this, and it's been an interesting and checkered story from LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, in the studio with me now. Morning, Natasha.
Morning, Nick. Yes, as you say, people are saying this is the 13th major U-turn of this government, a long, long list of different changes that this government have basically brought forward plans and then changed their minds. Last night it was revealed the government is going to water down their flagship plans over digital ID. Here was Keir Starmer introducing those plans just last September.
This government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work by the end of this Parliament. Let me spell that out. You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID. It's as simple as that.
Well, turns out it's actually not as simple as that, Nick. He wrote for the LBC app and an exclusive op-ed for us. We will use digital ID to help the people of this country take firm control of their future. We will work across society to get this right. But it's been a bit of a speedy change of heart, Nick. Here was the Borders Minister, Alex Norris, talking up the idea to you just yesterday.
Digital ID is absolutely...
When will that be online, do we think?
That's coming in by the end of this Parliament. And that is, you know, at its most important, digital ID will be to make sure people have the right to work. Employers, if they don't do the right thing, this will be our way of making sure that those who are working have that right to work, and those businesses that don't do things the right way face those sanctions.
But there was some opposition. 3 million people signed a petition against it, and people in government acknowledge that it has led to conspiracy theories and accusations of authoritarianism and state control. It was said to cost around £1.5 billion, and insiders have told me they thought it was a distraction from the Prime Minister's priority of the cost of living. Government sources say they were worried about essentially some 65-year-old being banned from work for not having the right ID.
Me.
So it could have been you, Nick. It could have been you. So what has changed? Essentially, there are going to be right-to-work checks. They should already be being carried out. Digital ID will exist. It will come into effect. But you will not have to use that digital ID to prove yourself and your identity. You can use other things instead, which you can already use, like a digital driving licence, which is coming down the track, or your passport. Here was the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, explaining this to you just a few minutes ago.
So I need to be absolutely clear with you, Nick. We are committed to a mandatory digital right-to-work check. At the moment, these right-to-work checks are a paper-based system. There's no digital records kept. It makes it very hard to target enforcement operations against businesses that are employing illegal workers. Now, we're going to consult on the detail of it. It could be that someone could prove their right to work through the digital ID that this government will be bringing in. But it might also be, for example, that there's a scan of a biometric chip within a passport or on an e-visa.
But why would I need one then, Heidi Alexander? If I've got a new passport or I've got a driver's licence, why would I need one of these digital ID cards?
Well, I think there's huge benefits that can be attached to. Well, I don't know about you, Nick. I mean, I don't carry cash and I don't carry a credit card. I do everything on my phone. And I'm often asked, have you got ID? And I'm rooting around in my bag to see whether I've got a credit card there. It would be really helpful to have digital ID on my phone.
But these were to be mandatory, Alexander. These were to be mandatory, Secretary of State, and now they're not, and it's the 13th U-turn.
So the digital right to work checks will be mandatory. I don't accept this characterisation that there's somehow been 30 U-turns that the government have done. I think that's political mischief that other political parties are, you know, seeking to put about. You know, the right to work, the digital right to work check will still be mandatory, and I can assure your listeners of that.
But, Nick, it is being seen as another damaging U-turn, a watering down for this government. Yesterday, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, had some advice for those at number 10.
If people think we're getting it wrong and we think that they're right, far better to do the right thing rather than to spare one's political blushes. In the NHS, we have an initiative called GERFT, Get It Right First Time. That should be our New Year's resolution for 2026. Let's try and get it right first time.
Get it right first time. Some good advice. So already people are asking, what is the point of this digital ID? If it's not compulsory, will anyone bother getting it? It was designed to stop illegal migration. Is that still a priority for the Prime Minister? Opposition parties have, of course, welcomed this change of heart. Reform and the Tories say it was an awful idea in the first place. The Lib Dems say the government have been doing so many U-turns, they will need anti-sickness drugs next.
Comment from Dan Hodges from the Mail on Sunday. Before I let you go, Natasha Clark, as one of my favourite Gen Zers.
That's really kind of you to say Gen Z, Nick. Really kind. I'm obviously older than that.
Are you? Well, you don't look at me. Anyway, everyone's reminiscing about 2016, 10 years ago. What's your favourite memory of 2016?
My favourite memory of 2016 was, of course, the Brexit referendum, the height of political fun for any journalist. Obviously, I was commiserating at the time because, right. You know, am I a secret Remainer on a Brexit team? Nick, you're going to have to guess.
I have to guess. Natasha Clark, who clearly doesn't get out enough, if that's her favourite memory of 2016. Nothing will top Leicester City winning the Premier League. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting on that serious matter. To Dan Hodges, political commentator for the Mail on Sunday and broadcaster. Right, Heidi Alexander will not allow it to be characterised as a U-turn, she told me. How do you react to that? Dan, morning.
Morning. Well, it's obviously a U-turn. I mean, obviously we had the clip from Keir Starmer saying how clear he was going to be on the policy. But let's be honest. I mean, as you've identified, this is becoming par for the course for Keir Starmer and par for the course for this government.
Why are they so poor at getting their message across or pursuing policies that they then have to backtrack on?
Because the reality is Keir Starmer doesn't actually believe in any concrete policies. I mean, we saw that in the run-up to the election. His whole objective in the run-up to the election was to simply get across the line. And as we've seen since he's done that, policy after policy has fallen by the wayside. But I think, I mean, it's not just damaging in terms of the impression it gives to the electorate of a shambolic government. I think what's most damaging is the impression it gives to his MPs, because they're saying to me, look, every time a controversial policy comes up, I go out and defend it at quite significant political cost. Then the government turns around, my own government turns around and pulls the rug out from under me. And I've literally had MPs saying to me, I'm not going to go out and defend this government's controversial policies anymore.
Well, and lastly, I'm going to hear from my listeners in a moment. I'm sure you'll hear from your readers at the Mail on Sunday. What are MPs? How much division is there in the ranks behind Sir Keir?
Well, to be perfectly honest, there isn't much division at all. Labour MPs are unified. They universally want him gone by the end of the year.
And it all focuses on May, Dan?
I think that's right, yes. That's a big if, though. That's if he can make it to May, the way things are going.
Dan, as ever, thanks very much. Dan Hodges, political commentator for the Mail on Sunday. Robert, you're going to be the first caller on that. Let's do the other side of the news headlines when I can give you a run at it. Plus, the Met wanted to know how many Freemasons were in their ranks. Well, they found out more than 300. So what happens next? We'll have a look at that in more detail after the 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has denied the government has U-turned after abandoning plans for mandatory digital ID. Human rights groups say the death toll in the protests in Iran is now at least 2,500. And plans have been announced to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. LBC weather cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast, dry and breezy elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M3 remains closed northbound between junctions 4 at Camberley and 3 at Lightwater. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier and there are severe delays back past junction 4A at Farnborough. The surrounding routes, especially the A331 northbound, are extremely congested. The M11's very slow southbound to junction 7 at Harlow after an accident. At Bromley Common, the A21 is closed northbound at the Crown roundabout and that's causing lengthy delays. Very busy on the A12 southbound at Mount Nessing at junction 12 and that's following an accident. And still slow on the A2 westbound up to the Bean interchange. It's because a car broke down earlier and one lane is closed for recovery.
LBC.
This Wednesday, the Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on. How are you beds holding up?
We're built for this.
Don't miss up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses.
Don't get caught napping. Shop now.
Dreams. Love your bed.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Right, let's pick up on what you're saying, Robert, coming to you in just a moment. Royston says this is such a waste of time and money. We have a system in place, a fine for employers and employees and employers. With anyone working without a national insurance number, it is simple. Similar point here. This comes in from John. Well done. They failed in an attempt to bring in a police state. Will they learn their lesson? Regrettably, with this lot, sadly not. Robert's in East Grinstead. Robert, would you have availed yourself of one of these? Good morning.
No, certainly not. Good morning, Nick. Hi. I'm in Donewood, actually, just outside East Grinstead as well, and we've been fortunate enough to still have our water.
I was just going to ask you, as you're in Sussex, you're not a million miles from Tunbridge Wells, so you've still got water. You're one of the lucky ones down there, huh?
Very, very lucky. Oh. I went down to the leisure centre on Sunday night, found it closed in East Grinstead, and that, and a big van was giving out water, and that was the first I heard of it. I was actually just wrapped up with things. Yeah, it's unusual.
Okay, well, we celebrate the fact you can turn your tap on. Tell me why you were opposed to digital IDs then, Robert.
Well, in reply to the Secretary of State, she says that she can do everything on her iPhone and she doesn't carry cash and she doesn't carry a card.
Credit cards, yeah.
I do not think that is any kind of innovation in the world we're currently living in at all. Mm-hmm. What you need in the world currently today is face-to-face. You know, I've said this before many times, sort of be boring. Mm. 9 times out of 10, the Blackwater Channel charge works fine. I pay by phone doing it. Occasionally it does not. Then I receive a fine. Trying to actually tell someone, look, the system didn't actually work.
Oh my
I had
God.
The money in my bank, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Everything like that. Telling an energy company face-to-face, I'm not lying. The real front-page story that never was, that should have happened, was the Royal Mint actually disappearing near the Tower of London.
You're talking now about, my goodness,
news.
We're covering all the stories here because that's the so-called super embassy. The Chinese are planning one of the biggest, would it be their biggest embassy in Europe, one of the biggest embassies anywhere in the world. Yes, Robert, a brief word on that then.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think this idea that somehow AI and iPhones and physical things that disappear are more important than sort of so-called all electronic, you know, electronic innovation. I'm not anti-AI or I'm not a Luddite by any stroke of the imagination. But I think, you know, the... gosh, we've got suddenly out of breath now. Hold on, let me think.
Well, you made your point anyway. You didn't want those ID cards. You've brilliantly covered a couple of other stories, so I will leave you to celebrate the fact that you could now go, should you so desire, turn your tap on, fill the kettle and have a cup of tea. You're one of the lucky ones down in that part of the world. Robert, thank you. More calls coming in on that. Just coming up on 8:23 and two other stories. An analysis by LBC has found councils in England and Wales spent more than £150 million last year on court cases against parents of children with special needs, SEND. Local authorities then lost 99%. That's right, 99% of the cases at tribunals for these SEND issues. Here with all the details, LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. We looked into this issue after a mum called Sarah called into your show and told you about her fight for a specialist school place for her son who lives with autism spectrum disorder.
The reality is that there are not enough specialist school places, and a lot of money is being wasted because parents are forced to go down the tribunal route in order to receive a specialist school place for their child. And the reality, I think, is more than 90% of parents are successful at tribunal. So I dread to think of the amount of taxpayers' money that's being wasted on that, which could have been spent in providing school places.
So we've done some digging and figured out that in a year, council spent £150 million on legal fees fighting parents, with the council losing in 99% of cases. Last year in England and Wales, over 25,000 appeals were launched by parents over decisions issued by councils about what additional support their child with special needs is entitled to. Around 14,000 of those reached tribunal level, where parents set out evidence in front of a judge. And remarkably, we figured out that that £150 million spent on legal fees would pay for 26,000 extra SEND places, which is, of course, more than the number of appeals that were lodged in the first place. And then council spend aside, the tribunal process can be extremely challenging for families, with these huge legal bills, years-long delays getting their cases heard, during which time their children are often not out, are often not in school altogether. One mother we've spoke to, who we're calling Sharon, took her council to court after it rejected a request to provide support for her daughter, who is paralysed from the waist down after suffering a rare form of cancer as a baby.
Our legal fees have been in excess of £25,000. You don't get that back. You don't win at tribunal and you're awarded your costs. And you are literally treading water, hemorrhaging money. It felt like the LA were trying to break us financially, psychologically. The whole process was supposed to take 20 weeks. And at that point, we were at 91 weeks. And that's having gone through tribunal, cruising towards another one.
So councils and families both just hemorrhaging thousands fighting each other. And this is an issue that an increasing number of parents are up against. Almost 1.7 million children in the UK get SEND support. That's more than 1 in 20 pupils overall, a proportion which has doubled over the last decade, partly driven by better diagnosis, more awareness of various conditions. Parents tell us they think councils, which are under huge financial strain, are rejecting applications to try to reduce or delay the number of support packages they need to provide.
It was such a challenging time. You were made to feel gaslit. I was looking at these people thinking, how are you making these decisions? What am I seeing that you're not seeing?
So the government is set to publish the school's white paper early this year, which will set out some changes to the SEND system, but it will probably fall short of the fundamental reform of the tribunal system, which some campaigners are calling for. Terry Jeremy is the MP for South West Norfolk, who ousted Liz Truss. He has so many SEND cases in his constituency, he's had to hire a dedicated caseworker, and told us big, deeply informed changes are needed.
I want to see actually a real understanding of why the demand has increased for SEND support, putting in place early support to reduce that. We can't have a situation where parents are desperate to get the right support for their children and coming up against obstacles all the time. And I hope very much that the government's white paper achieves that.
So a spokesperson for the Department for Health has acknowledged the fight that families face, saying work is underway to provide earlier help for families, including £3 billion for 50,000 more specialist places. They say there are no plans to abolish SEND tribunals and that there will always be a legal right to additional support for children with special needs.
LBC's Helen Hottenbrock with that report. Let's go through some of those figures again then. £150 million from councils in England and Wales, LBC has discovered. They lose 99%. They lose 99% of the cases. And as Helen was told us, that amount of money, therefore, would fund 26,000 places. 26,000 SEND places and effectively take care of the problem. Are you one of those parents that have been successful? Are you still fighting? Let's go to some of the texts and tweets that are coming in on this. Karen says, only parents with the money to take councils to court get the right provision for their SEND kids. So poorer kids with SEND, of course it's special education needs and disabilities, poorer kids with SEND, says Karen, miss out and better off SEND kids get the right support. Same subject, this comes in from Barbara. My daughter is 14 now. We're still fighting the school and the local authority. You didn't tell me then where you actually, how old when you started the fight, but at 14, of course, there's possibly only 2 or 4 years left, effectively, of her education. Another Barbara says, we're now going to a tribunal, another £4,000 for one day's representation. That seems extraordinary, doesn't it? We're also talking about digital ID cards, and I have to reflect, some of you like the idea. Ian Scott, I would take an ID card if it meant we had one consistent ID number rather than driving licence number, passport number, company's house ID number, unique tax reference, NI, National Insurance, NHS number. The list goes on and on and on. And Karen says, bring on digital ID, no more utility bills, 3 months bank statements plus passport rubbish. Well, I have to reflect that some of you are in favour. I have to say most of you are not. But let's come back when we can to those. That's very important work done by LBC. Give you those figures one last time ahead of the news bulletin. £150 million a year spent by your local authorities, in some instances fighting you, provision for your children who are in some way possibly disadvantaged and need additional help, and they then lose 99% of the cases. That possibly affects you, and if so, we want to hear your story. Plus, here's the Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley. He wants to find out how many Masons are among his ranks.
I'm not uncomfortable about Mason serving, I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflicts of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
Well, the sunlight is here, the illumination is present, so what does that mean for those Masons? And in the next hour, stirring theme music to the Warhorse film there. I'll be speaking with the author of the novel, Sir Michael Morpurgo, as the government launches its National Year of Reading. That's in the next hour. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. The news with Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has denied that the government has U-turned after abandoning plans for digital ID cards. Heidi Alexander has told Nick claims that Labour has reversed on 13 policies is political mischief from opposition parties. Officials in Iran say there will be fast trials and executions for people detained in anti-government protests. Donald Trump has warned the US will take very strong action if people are killed. And initial plans have been revealed to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for the project. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
The death toll in Iran mounts to almost unbelievable proportions. Will Donald Trump now intervene, as he has threatened to do, to protect the protesters against a regime that is becoming increasingly desperate and increasingly bloodthirsty?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at ocado.com.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk more about this Sender story that LBC has uncovered. Daniel will be the next caller. Here's the lunacy. The government, the local authorities are spending more money on lawyers and fighting these cases than it would cost them to actually provide the places. I mean, if that isn't the definition of madness, I don't know what is. Fiona in Berkshire says, regardless, why is no one talking about the VAT on schools that forced many specialist schools to close? LBC featured a number of calls on exactly this topic, warning parents would be flooding the state school system. Clearly, that is now exactly what is happening. Well, I remember at the time, Fiona, I got a lot of criticism for going on and on about how many schools would close, and people said, well, it's rich people, they shouldn't be able to buy out, and now we know the reality. Barbara's come back. Do you remember she told us about how she's been fighting? Her daughter is 14. Thank you, Barbara. You said that you started the process when your daughter was 11. You're £12,000 into this. This is your second child, you tell us. Your first child cost £25,000. Had to have lawyers for him from the age 9 to 18. I do hope that you get somewhere on that. And lastly, this comes from, oh, Gem, I'm going to have to shorten this. I'm responding to the report. I've had to go through the tribunal system for both my children. One was resolved before tribunal, but the other had to go to tribunal. It's an incredibly stressful process on top of the impact of supporting the children. Daniel in Hendon. Daniel, what's your story? I understand it's your daughter. Might I ask how old she is? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yeah, she's 14. First time caller, but it's something I feel extremely passionate about and felt the need to sort of chip into the conversation.
Please.
So my daughter has been out of school for 3 years due to sort of SEND issues, and it's just the continued failings of the local authority, where it's a bit of a right-hand, left-hand situation, where when you finally get to speak to somebody there, nobody really seems to know what they're doing. You know, the main priority here should be to the welfare of the children and getting them what is right for them. But it's continued delay tactics of, well, we need further medical evidence, we need further this, we need further that. And all this thing takes time, you know, to obtain. And in my experience, it's just complete delay tactics. Delay it. Eventually the child will then be out of secondary school and that child's effectively off of our hand. And that can't be right,
what,
you know.
What sort
really
of medical...
I mean,
surely once you get... Are they still called Ed Sykes, educational psychologists?
Yes, they are.
Get an Ed Psych and he or she says this, and you possibly get your doctor involved if they're a medical... What else can they possibly ask for?
Well, and this is exactly the question that I've asked them. So my daughter has a diagnosis, autism, went private because of the sheer length of time to wait on the NHS. Got the diagnosis, presented that to the local authority, and then 6 months later, when they actually get to look at her case, they say, oh, we need something a bit more current. I said,
oh, for good.
It was 6 months ago. It cost, you know, a lot of money, and just said, we need something current. I said, okay, please explain to me clearly, what would you like,
and
I will go and get that for you. And I still haven't got an answer to this day.
It's patently obvious what they're doing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
They're just knocking the ball into the long grass every chance they can get.
And it's the psychological drain on the parents and that as well. It's so difficult when all you want is
Let's talk lastly about your daughter. And you sound a very determined individual, so I don't think they're going to shake you off. But what does it mean to her? Give us an idea what it means for your daughter. That's the person who's key here.
Absolutely. So all it does is just add to her anxiety of what is happening in life, because she doesn't know from one day to the next of, you know, is she going to be back in education? What is the plan going forward? And you can just see the anxiety building every day, because she doesn't know and we don't have the answers. It's terribly sad for her, it's terribly sad for us as parents, and I do sympathise with everybody else in this situation, because something does need to change.
Daniel, thank you. It's something we need to raise when we next have the Education Secretary on. I think we'll try and make sure to do that, because this of course came from an earlier caller from Sharon. So when you hear me say, thanks, Daniel, good luck with your daughter, when you hear me say to people, oh, we need to take a look at that, I'm not just blithely mouthing statements, I'm actually saying, and in this instance, my colleagues actually got to grips with it. Someone who asks that I maintain their anonymity, and of course I'm happy to do that. I'm a head teacher of specialist school, they say. The issue is a severe lack of specialist provision and a lack of understanding and knowledge of SEND needs. We're oversubscribed. We receive applications daily. I could fill my school 10 times over. Something needs to change, says that head whose anonymity we shall respect. We'll come back to that conversation. But do you remember, as recently as last month, the exchange between me, obviously, and the Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, about the force's decision to make officers declare if they had links to the Freemasonry organisation?
We consulted over the summer. It's noteworthy that 2/3 of our officers think it ought to be declarable, which goes to the level of concern that any society which has a hierarchy, a degree of secrecy, and an expectation of sort of loyalty to each other, there's a concern, I think, widespread that may lead to not acting without fear or favour. I'm sure that that many Masons do great charity work and it's not a threat, but we need to do everything possible to protect the integrity of the organisation.
You're uncomfortable about Masons serving under you?
I'm not uncomfortable about Masons serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
The Masons are saying it's, quote, unlawful, disproportionate, unfair and discriminatory.
They can say that. I disagree. If you look back in history, you'll see so many reports questioning Freemasonry and the police. We have a hard recommendation made like 5 years ago by Nuala alone in relation to a very sensitive inquiry from history. We've looked at intelligence picture we have today, and the combination of factors, I'm satisfied this is absolutely necessary. And the fact the majority of the good men and women in the Met are very clear this ought to be declarable, that they think undermines their trust in the organisation, that's important. There are many, many women officers in the organisation particularly who are massively relieved at this decision, okay, because they feel they are disadvantaged by sadly, a boys' club.
Have you ever been invited to become a Freemason?
No.
You have no interest in
I've got no interest in it whatsoever.
The Olone case, to which the Commissioner referred, is, of course, the death of the private detective Daniel Morgan down in South London many years ago. Well, now the number's in. 316 officers and staff have declared a membership to the Freemasons, or what's called a hierarchical association. I need to tell you that in a court order earlier this month, Mr. Justice Chamberlain said the issue of whether to grant an injunction would be determined by a judge without a hearing sometime this week, but let's capture where we find ourselves now. Mick Randall is a former detective inspector with the Met, a former Freemason, and wrote Twilight Creepers. He now owns a private investigation company, and he joins me now. So, 316 then, what should happen to them in your book? Does it in any way conflict with being a good copper? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I think the 316 is a very small number. I think only 5% have answered so far the questionnaire. So I would put that there's probably about 3,000 in the Met at the moment. In my time, there would have probably been up to about 6,000 or 7,000. I don't think anything should happen to them. They've done nothing wrong at all. There's nothing wrong with Freemasonry, but I rarely agree with the commissioner, but I do on this case. I think they should state that they are Freemasons. There's nothing wrong in that, and I think it's right to do so.
How many years were you in the Met, Mick?
I was 14 years in the Met, and then 16 years in the National Crime Squad, which is now the National Crime Agency.
Of those 30 years, how many of those years did you spend as a Mason?
4 years I was actually in, but 2 years I was actually active until I got asked to leave by a senior officer.
Why were you asked to leave by a senior officer, Mick?
I didn't know at the time, but in 97, the lodge I was in was just around the corner from where Daniel Morgan was murdered. And there was inquiries going on around a luncheon club that was connected to the lodge I was at, and that was just full of corrupt policemen.
If you had your time over, would you have joined the Masons?
I joined mainly. It's a sort of, if you like amateur dramatics, you like learning words and playing a part and having a beer and a meal and a bit of fraternity. I liked it. It did what I wanted at the time in my early 30s. I quickly got bored from it. There's nothing wrong in it at all. With all corruption, it's individuals. And when you get corruptors and you get people who are well-oiled, and there is that degree of fraternity, corruption happens. And you can't see corruption, but it happens quite. It's in the wind.
I'm sure it never happened, but was there ever an occasion when it sort of conflicted of your role as a police officer or a law enforcement officer?
Never, and I would never have let it, but there's a chapter in my book. I'm not plugging my book, I'm just telling you there was a young lad, Andrew. He was a tennis pro, and he came in to see me and said there was a contract put out on him, and that a corrupt police officer, former police officer, had been involved. And basically, that lad died in Spain in very suspicious circumstances. And was masonry involved in that death? Absolutely.
Lastly, reflect, if you would, on what the commissioner told me. He says that 2/3 of the men and women serving under him think that masons or hierarchical organisations, you should declare membership. Do you buy that figure?
The figure...
He reckons 66% of his teams will want people to come forward and say, yes, I'm a Mason, or yes, I belong to a confidential organisation, that they want it... I don't want to use the word rooted out, because it makes it sound like an illegal action. They want it disclosed. Let's use the word disclosed. Do you reckon it's as high a percentage as that, Mick?
Yeah, possibly even more. I think it definitely is the time to just lay. There's no, being a Freemason is not a corrupt act. There's nothing wrong with Freemasonry. Most of the people in it are good people, but there are some corruptors within that and so therefore a level playing field, a transparent one, we need.
Could say the same about radio presenters, Mick. Can't all be like me. Mick Randall, thank you. You're a former detective inspector with the Met. You were a Freemason. You have written Twilight Creepers, and you own a private investigation company. We might come to calls on that. Coming up after the news, we'll hear from Dame Priti Patel. She is, of course, Shadow Foreign Secretary. What actions should the United Kingdom, or additional actions the United Kingdom, be taking about the problem in Iran? On that subject, here's President Trump speaking in Detroit yesterday.
I've cancelled all meetings with the Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. And all I say to them is help is on its way.
And the TikTok sensation that is memories and reminiscences of 2016? Apparently it's huge for Gen Zers and millennials. Remind you of some events of 2016.
The decision taken in 1975 by this country to join the common market has been reversed by this referendum to leave the EU.
That is, of course, the voice of David Dimbleby on the BBC. Now, what else happened in... Oh, I know.
Premier League champions 2016, the amazing Leicester City.
Not right to hear that often these days, it has to be said. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has denied that the government has U-turned after it scrapped plans for mandatory digital ID. Officials in Iran say there will be fast trials and executions for people detained in anti-government protests. And initial plans have been revealed to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast today, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M3 remains closed northbound between junctions 4 at Camberley and 3 at Lightwater. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier and there are long queues on the approach. Also busy on the M11 southbound to junction 7 at Harlow following an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. The A21 is closed northbound at Bromley Common because a car has broken down, so that's causing queues. A lorry's broken down on the A4 eastbound at Sutton Court Road in Chiswick, and there are delays back onto the M4 all the way from the Heston services. On the trains, Great Western Railway services are disrupted. They can't run between Newbury and Pusey, and that's because the train's broken down. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. like the house proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power ballads. Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at
Get.compare.
Now that's savvy.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Need somebody to love.
There's a whole lot to love in the Dreams Mega Clearance event, with up to 40% off a range of beds and mattresses. And when you buy a Tempur-Pro Air SmartCool mattress, you'll receive a free Mega Tempur bedding bundle worth up to £860. Dreams. Love your bed.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away, so help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more Lumbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's going to be on 10 to 9. Let's come back to our conversation about the most important part of all of our lives, which, if we're fortunate enough to them, is our children. Jodie's in Medway. Who are we talking about in your case, Jodie? Hello.
Hello. I'm talking about my son, who is diagnosed with autism as well, and I'm in special needs school, so I see kind of both sides of this argument.
Right.
And my son was diagnosed at 2 years old.
How old is he now?
He's 10 now, going to be 11 this year.
Okay.
So I got the ball rolling. I knew from about 10 months old that he was different. I knew there was something going on, so I got the ball rolling with early help. The children's centres, they were really good. But obviously, this is talking 8 years ago.
Yeah.
8 years ago. And I can say I didn't have a problem from the moment I said, I think there's something different here, to the moment he was diagnosed was about a year. In between those times. And then after he was diagnosed, I knew he needed an EHCP to go to a SEND school.
Right.
So I got started doing that. And again, the rules were it has to be done by 20 weeks. And it got to the 20-week mark. And I hadn't heard nothing. And I thought, this isn't going to happen, because I got told by everyone else, you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to fight. So I was like, no, this isn't going to happen. And after the 20 weeks, I rung up and I said, blah, blah, blah. When am I going to get an answer? And they said, oh, the lady's gone off with a broken arm. I said, wonderful, but that's not my problem. Mm. That's your problem. And she was like, no, that's fine. Ring back in a week.
Mm.
So that week went, and I definitely rung back. And there was another excuse along those lines why it wasn't done. And again, I kept myself ringing daily. And I think they saw my number to the point, and they were like, I can't put up with this anymore. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I did push to get it. But I have got no squirms in saying I was really lucky in the diagnosis, the EHCP process. He started SEND school in year R. So he's had a really...
He started SEND school in year what? Sorry, year?
Year R. So first reception. So
oh, sorry.
He's
year
been
R.
There.
Right. I'm so sorry. It's year called R. Year R, is it? Right. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been at the same school from year R. He's now on his last year of primary school, and he is doing amazing. But I see the other side of the spectrum as well, and people cannot get an EHCP, so their children cannot go to a special needs school. So they're stuck in mainstream school.
When you talk to other mums who possibly have issues in and around your part of Kent, do they report similar successful stories, or they had some issues?
No, I can only remember mine being the most successful story, if I'm honest. People were like, how have you got that so quickly? How have you done this? How have you... But I didn't do nothing differently. I just pushed and pushed like you naturally would, like ringing and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when my son was in nursery and I was saying, I think he's autistic, and they had never filled out the paperwork before.
Let me ask you this, and I appreciate it's difficult to answer because you don't know, because you haven't seen the boy with that, but what do you think it's provided for him? I appreciate you haven't had any education where he's not, but what has it given the boy, do you imagine?
I don't necessarily think a lot, and I don't think a diagnosis gives you a lot. I do believe once you've got the EHCP, that does give you more, because you can then go to a SEND school and get the provision that you do need.
You've done really well, Jodie, particularly when you talk to other mums who are still battling. Well done for your boy. I hope his education career continues with great success as he goes to big school, which, of course, will be later this year. 7 minutes before nine is the time. Now, let's go to global affairs. And as it was, we were reporting this morning, it is feared the executions will begin against protesters in Iran. One 26-year-old man, Irfan Soltani, is set for execution for simply shouting during a protest. Now, this comes, of course, as Donald Trump says that help, quote, is on its way. And here in the UK, we're set to introduce full and further sanctions against Iran's finance, energy, transport and software sectors. That would add to those already imposed on oil, energy, nuclear and financial industries. But is it enough? Well, let's turn to senior politician Priti Patel now. Dame Priti Patel served as International Development Secretary and Home Secretary and is now Shadow Foreign Secretary and joins me now. Good to have you on, Dame Priti. Is the government doing enough? If not, what should it be doing? Morning to you.
So I actually think the government does need to act and do much more. Announcing sanctions is one thing. You know, that will take time. These protests have been going on for over 2 weeks. And what we do know about the Iranian regime, Nick, is that they circumvent sanctions as well. They have been doing that pretty successfully for a long time and bypassing sanctions. And the reality is right now, I think there is more that we can do in terms of debilitating their ability to basically be so ruthless in their own country. So offensive cyber is one thing that we can actually deploy. We can work with our Five Eyes partners and countries on this, including the United States. We can do much more behind the scenes and covertly. And that's clearly where Britain has a lot of experience, and we should be deploying that. And I absolutely do believe that, you know, we're hearing a little bit from America right now, but I just don't think that it's good enough to just sit back and sit on our hands at a time when these protests, which have been lasting for 2 weeks now, really are looking like they're affecting some kind of change within the country.
Let's pick up on some of those words, Dame Priti. Offensive cyber. What does that mean in practical terms? What do you think the UK should be looking at there?
So we have huge capacity and capabilities through our National Cyber Security Centre and actually through GCHQ and other type structures that we have in government, where we could absolutely start going in and, you know, cutting back some of those routes that the regime uses to sort of block signals and stuff like that to stop people in Iran from accessing information. And by the way, that's exactly how the Iranian regime spreads its own propaganda as well. So there are things of that nature that we can do. But alongside that, Nick, let's not forget, Iran is a hostile state in our own country. They have previously sent their assassination squads to the United Kingdom. They have their own proxies in our country. They have people that are funded by the Iranian regime in our country. We should be cutting all of that off. We should be much more ruthless, whether it's through the security agencies, through the Home Office, even through the Charity Commission, in basically blocking and stopping some of these organizations donations and the funding streams. And that's basically what we should be doing and tackling it in our own country. And that has been done before. You know, successive governments have done that. But this is where the government could take action immediately and start making sure that these individuals are not spreading the propaganda and supporting the regime in our own country, and also using Britain as a base to go and spread Iranian propaganda across Europe too.
We don't know what help looks like as in regards to the words from President Donald Trump. If there was some kind of military involvement, would the United Kingdom support that?
Well, we don't know. And obviously, there were the nuclear strikes last year, which the British government did not back on support. They sat on the fence, if you recall, over that. We don't know what military strikes could look like, what the targets would be, even how that would be conducted. So we're just hearing that from the US, and that takes a hell of a lot of detailed planning. What I would say, though, Nick, and you will understand this, is do not forget, we have joint bases with the Americans. So the question would be whether or not Britain even, you know, allows America, works with America to use that shared space and those bases. So these will be questions that obviously we will continue to ask of the government. But I think fundamentally right now, Iran is a hostile regime. Look at what they do across the world to our allies and in our own country. Britain needs to stand very firmly and strongly with the Iranian citizens right now and against the authoritarian Iranian regime.
Can't let you go without having another word. The front pages are split today, Dame Pretty. Some going with the conversation we've had about Iran, others going with what would appear to be the 13th U-turn by this government. This one concerning digital ID. I remind my listeners, of course, you served as a Home Secretary, a response to what appears to be the government's U-turn there.
Well, first of all, they claimed that the digital ID was going to stop the boats, if you recall, Nick, and stop people smugglers and all this kind of stuff. We have laws in place already, and the only thing that will stop that now is effectively a strong deterrent to stop illegal migrants from coming to our country. It just shows what a shambolic government we have. They just make these spurious announcements without any detail. By the way, that proposal for digital ID was going to cost £1.8 billion. I mean, the totals just keep on racking up. Don't forget they're spending £38 billion to give away the Chagos Island. This government is just totally irresponsible and reckless. And, you know, that proposal was just a non-starter and a complete waste of time at the outset.
Lastly, the great Zahawi has gone. Nadeem Zahawi. How much are you going to miss him, Dame Pretty?
Well, Nadeem stood down at the last election, Nick, so he's not in Parliament with us on the front line against Labour on the political battlefield, so to speak. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's a choice Nadeem has made. I'm sorry when people from my party or formerly in my party go along and do that. But the reality is, it's only my party that is standing up to this Labour government, forcing them into all these U-turns, as you well know, whether it's on the farming issues, grooming gangs, on tax, taxes, etc., etc. And we're the ones that are robustly holding the government to account.
Grateful for your time, Dame Pretty Patel, Shadow Foreign Secretary. 1 minute before eight, we're going. 1 minute before nine. 1 minute before nine, we're going late to the news. Give a minute to William in Blackpool. Talk about the special educational needs. Now, you offer support. How and what would your words of advice be, William? Morning.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for speaking again. Very quickly, it's a very weighted process, and it can be very frightening. But I just say to families, I offer support all the time. Be strong, keep fighting it, because eventually you will get where you need to be. They've made it very easier these days to fill out the paperwork online.
Okay.
But feel free to reach out to people in your area who offer the support like I do.
How do people find people such as yourself?
I'm on Facebook. I won't give you the details because I don't want to thingy, right. I'm on Facebook, but other people are advertising everywhere. Family advocates, charity advocation, everything like that. Just get yourself out there. Speak to these people who've been through life experience, like myself, two children on the spectrum. And it's just life experience is the way forward.
Well done for what you do. William, thank you. Facebook, look it up for family advocates. William, thank you for hanging on the line, and good luck for all the people that you are helping. Help for the north of England, a railway on the way, and the view of people at Manchester Piccadilly.
Heard that many, many times, though. You've heard HS2 this, or is it HS3 that? It's shambolic. Enough of the promises. It's time to start seeing real, real action.
Plus the TikTok sensation that is reminiscences and memories of just 2016, 10 years ago, but Gen Zers and millennials love it. We'll look at those stories and more after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a cabinet minister has denied that the government has U-turned after scrapping plans for mandatory digital ID. Instead, people will be able to use other documents like passports to prove their right to work in the UK. The Conservatives have branded it spineless, saying it's Labour's 13th U-turn since coming to power. But speaking to Nick, the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, pushed back on the claims.
The digital right to work checks will be mandatory. I don't accept this characterisation that there's somehow been 30 U-turns that the government have done. I think that's political mischief that other political parties are, you know, seeking to put about. Digital right to work check will still be mandatory, and I can assure your listeners of that.
Officials in Iran say there will be fast trials and executions for people detained in anti-government protests. Donald Trump has warned the US will take very strong action if people are killed. Plans have been announced to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for the project. It'll come after major rail upgrades across the north of England, including east-to-west connections. The Labour Mayor of South Yorkshire, Oliver Coppard, has told LBC the network desperately needs modernising.
We've had very frank exchanges behind closed doors, as you would expect, about what South Yorkshire needs and deserves. South Yorkshire's brilliantly placed. We've got a really fast-growing economy now, and we need to unlock further growth through better transport investment, and that's exactly what I've told the government.
Council spent more than £150 million last year on legal battles against parents of children with special needs. New analysis by LBC shows local authorities in England and Wales lost 99% of the Sen Tribunal cases. The government says it'll set out reforms to the system early this year. And around 17,000 properties in Kent and parts of Sussex are entering a fifth day without water. The outage has been blamed on the recent cold weather. South East Water says it is continuing to work around the clock to restore supply to impacted customers. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 26 at 10,164. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast, dry and breezy elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Because you bought your robot vacuum on your Barclay card, you got 0% interest for up to 24 months, which makes watching it, hypnotically sweeping up your crumbs, even more satisfying. Oh, missed a bit. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Barclay card. Make money work for you. Subject to financial status, new customers only. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable, 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on £1,200 credit limit. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine on Wednesday, January the 14th. If you are waiting on your platform in Sheffield, in Manchester, in Liverpool, not so long to wait. The great north of England will be unlocked. You've got to wait a few years, I have to say. But eventually, £45 billion worth of railway investment. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, we go back to this TikTok sensation. Looking and reminiscences of 2016. Some of the global events include...
We're going to get to work immediately for the American people. And we're going to be doing a job that hopefully you'll be so proud of your president. You'll be so proud.
Yes, Donald J. Trump, the first installment. Plus, also later in this hour, a celebration of reading as part of a government initiative. If you're struggling, that's the theme music to War Horse, directed and produced by Steven Spielberg, by the way. But we'll be speaking with the author of the book, Sir Michael Morpurgo, later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
You're listening to LBC 6 minutes after nine, news breaking at this time, and the chief constable at the centre of the Maccabee fan ban controversy has admitted to misleading MPs by using artificial intelligence. Craig Guildford, chief constable of the West Midlands Police, told the Home Affairs Committee in a letter his forces' use of AI had mistakenly revealed a previous match that never happened. This was a fictitious game, as we told you at the time, between Maccabi Tel Aviv and West Ham. It was used by the force as part of their justification for banning Israeli fans from travelling to attend a game against Aston Villa. We might give you more detail on that. As the report says, pressure continues to mount on Guildford to resign. Well, he's at best deceitful, he's dissembling, he's duplicitous. He needs to go. Just do the decent thing, man. Just go. More on that later, perhaps. Now, if you are listening in the great north of England, is it finally time? Promise after promise after promise of high-speed rail links that have been cancelled and others you are going to get, particularly let railways that link across, not so much vertical as horizontal, joining up the great cities of Leeds and Bradford and Sheffield and whatever else it might be. Well, the government have announced its intentions to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. This is after previous plans to extend HS2 between the two cities were scrapped by Rishi Sunak's Conservative government back in 2023 to save money. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has been taking a look back down the tracks at the life and times of HS2.
Stand well back from platform A. The next train at platform 2 does not stop here.
Governments of many colours have long promised to build quicker rail links across the UK. The idea of HS2 was first floated back in 2009 when Labour were last in power. But even as early as 2011, it was beset by delays.
Plans for a high-speed rail link between London and Birmingham have been switched to the slow track. The new Transport Secretary, Justin Greening, will now announce her verdict on the HS2 link in early January.
The plan was backed by the then-Chancellor, George Osborne, back in 2014.
We're building High Speed 2, which will connect 8 of the 10 largest cities in the UK, including Manchester, Leeds and Sheffield.
Construction is still underway and the 2033 opening date has been pushed back. The costs have spiralled to around £100 billion. Meanwhile, the part north of Birmingham, which was due to go to Manchester, was scrapped by the Conservatives under Rishi Sunak in a bid to save money.
And the right thing to do when the facts change is to have the courage to change direction.
LBC reporter Henry Riley was among the first to report that the new Labour government was keen to do more back in October 2024.
The government is set to partially reverse that and run HS2 beyond Birmingham after all. So HS2 will run from London to Birmingham to Crewe.
There was then speculation the government would end the line at Old Oak Common rather than Euston. But the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, eventually did commit that it would go all the way.
Today, we are securing delivery of the project between Old Oak Common and Birmingham. And we are committing the funding required to begin tunnelling work to London Euston Station.
Yeah. Today, the government say they want multiple fast trains an hour in the north of England. But there's no budget or plan for when HS2 might be extended. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, says it will take time to deliver.
Construction work will start in the 2030s you will know the experience of building rail infrastructure. As much as I might like it to be faster than it is, it does take time to do this properly.
The Tories have accused the government of watering down their plans, calling it a permanent mirage that is endlessly redesigned and never delivered.
Permanent mirage, says LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. But what of people up and the ground in those areas? LBC's Liam Gotting has been speaking with commuters at the normally very busy Manchester Piccadilly station. Liam, morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, yeah, it all feels quite familiar, this, doesn't it? A promise from a government to invest in and improve railways in the north of England. This time, the government announcing an intention to build a new railway line between Manchester and Birmingham. Of course, we were supposed to have that anyway as part of HS2, which was cancelled by Rishi Sunak's government in October of 2023. Now, the Treasury say this new line won't be a reinstatement of HS2, but is this new Manchester to Birmingham line something that people here want? And after a decade or more of promises to improve rail services in the north, do they have any faith that it'll actually happen? I've been asking commuters here at Manchester Piccadilly those exact questions.
people want to go down to the south a little bit faster as well and come back a little bit faster. So I think it would benefit to open up, I suppose, more of the country to people from the north as well.
I think there's some really valuable commuting that goes on in terms of people's time and resources and talent that goes up and down the country. And I think if you can make that better, it's only better economically for the country.
I don't think we need a new train line. We need affordable trains so that people are on them. And then once people are on them, build the new lines.
I travel actually to Birmingham a lot because I have a friend that lives there. It would, for me personally, make a big difference, but also the coaches are always packed between Manchester and Birmingham, so I think it would benefit a lot of people here.
I've heard that many, many times though. You've heard HS2 this, or is it HS3 that? It's shambolic. Enough of the promises. It's time to start seeing real action.
So how much will this new Manchester to Birmingham line cost, and when will it be built? Well, the short answer is, Nick, we don't know. No timescale has been provided on when it will be built, but the Treasury says it won't open until after the completion of Northern Powerhouse Rail, which is a scheme to boost east-to-west rail connections here in the north of England, which, for context, was first announced 12 years ago. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, says the government is rolling up its sleeves to deliver better rail in the north, but I have to say, Nick, there doesn't appear to be a lot of faith here in Manchester this morning that it'll actually be done.
Liam Gotting reporting from Manchester Piccadilly Station, and I have to say I sort of share that sense of, well, frustration, or can I say doubt? And obviously it makes sense. These are great cities with huge populations, and the fact that it's so difficult to get across the country, relatively easy to get up and down, needs to be addressed. But let's turn to Zoe Billingham, who's director of IPPR North, that's the Institute for Public Policy Research North, who joins me now. In a couple of snappy sentences, what is IPPR North there? What do you lobby and represent? Good morning.
Good morning. So we're set up basically to speak for the regions and to make sure their voices are heard in this debate. You know, when we think back to HS2, you know, the bit up to the north was cancelled, the bit down to London wasn't. And that's why you need more and more voices like IPPR North in the north campaigning and advocating for rail and other things that we need.
Zoe, you mentioned HS2. It was meant to begin in 2017. It was meant to be operational this year, 2026. It was meant to cost in the region of £33 billion. It's already cost more than £80 billion. It began in 2019, and the very soonest any trains will run at it, 2033, and they won't get to you anyway. Should we have that level of disdain for this latest project, or am I being too gloomy?
So look, I don't think HS2 is really a choice. We're going to need that upgrade, that new stretch between Birmingham and Manchester for capacity reasons. There was a terrible branding mistake on HS2. Yes, it could save some time having this new railway, but really it's about capacity, getting people off the roads, those crowded coaches that we just heard about. So it's essential.
When do you think, if you were listening to my interview with the Transport Secretary, they might not even start any of the exploratory work until the 2030s. Is that soon enough, or when do you think, how do you think the government should organise its priorities to possibly bring relief a bit sooner?
Well, I think that the government prioritising Northern Powerhouse Rail is absolutely correct. In terms of regional growth and the north, that has long been our priority, so I'm really pleased to hear that. Absolutely agree that it's frustrating that these things don't happen quicker, and I would hope that the government is looking for every possible way to bring it forward sooner than 2030, because people want to see spades in the ground.
Lastly, are you able to give us a figure for how much possible output there could be unlocked in cities such as Manchester and Bradford and Sheffield and York and wherever it might be, the sort of sleeping giants that they could provide to growth in the economy?
Look, even if the productivity growth, the kind of measure of economic success of the north, was brought up to the average of the UK, an extra £40 billion would be brought into the economy each year. So look, you know, this will more than pay for itself in the long term, but it's about having the political guts and the tenacity to commit to it now.
Zoe Billingham, your director of IPPR North, thanks for your input on that. We'll come over to you, particularly if you live in those cities. I don't need to identify them again. And you want to try and get it. I mean, here's I think the Times does this quite well. It points out connectivity in the north lags significantly behind the south. A Paddington to Reading journey of 35 miles now takes 22 minutes. That's courtesy of what we call the Lizzie or the Elizabeth line. Okay, 35 miles, 22 minutes. A journey between Liverpool and Manchester Airport of 29 miles will take an hour and 25 minutes and stop 21 times. 21 times to get from Liverpool to Manchester Airport. That's not right. We can't treat people in the north of England in that fashion. It's just unfair. But do you actually think this will happen? And the TikTok sensation, which is fond memories of this year. I live my day, I took you off the left. Lush Life, currently number 8 in the official singles chart, peaked at number 3 back in 2016, the 6th biggest song of that year, the year to which all the millennials and Gen Zers look back with such fondness. I'll be asking why. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The head of West Midlands Police has blamed the use of AI and apologised for giving MPs false information about the decision to ban Maccabi Tel Aviv fans from a football game. A cabinet minister has denied the government has U-turned after scrapping plans for mandatory digital ID. And plans have been announced to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast today, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M3 is closed northbound between junctions 4 at Camberley and 3 at Lightwater. It's because a lorry was on fire earlier. There are severe delays from junction 4A at Farnborough and also on the surrounding routes like the A331. Also very busy on the M25 clockwise from junction 3 at the M20 to 4 at Orpington. Also severe delays on the M4 eastbound from the Heston services to the Chiswick roundabout. And then on the A4, it's slow all the way up to Sutton Court Road. It's because a lorry has broken down and only one lane is open. The A21 remains closed northbound at Bromley Common, and that's because a car has broken down and there are lengthy queues on the approach.
This is LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply, see lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more Lumbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Quick thank you to Robert, who's pointed out, I think there was a mistake in the paper there, padding to Reading on the Elizabeth line takes about an hour. Yes, I think what they meant was, actually, I'm so sorry, thank you for correcting, what they meant is, of course, if you get on the train from Paddington, the overground train, it's not the Elizabeth line. Although, I think it's fair to say the Elizabeth line has unlocked many of the parts of London, and now, just to give you that figure again, and I will correct it from the newspaper, connectivity in the north lags significantly behind the south. Paddington to Reading journey of 35 miles takes 22 minutes on an overground train. A journey between Liverpool and Manchester Airport, 29 miles, takes an hour and 25 minutes and stops 21 times. Well, no wonder they've been calling out for connectivity so much, and we'll return to that conversation a little bit later. But if you've listened to me for any time, you will know, and indeed we had a campaign, didn't we, on this station, on this programme, on this show last year, Kids Who Read Succeed, and the attempt to try and ensure, and do you remember how so many people, big names, came and read passages from books, Alan Titchmarsh, Alexander Armstrong, Joanna Lumley, all reading passages from Beatrix Potter that you could then download. Well, now a number of leading celebrities are among those helping throw their weight behind a new nationwide push to get people reading for pleasure as the government and the National Literacy Trust launch the National Year of Reading. It's a year-long campaign called Go All In, and it aims to reverse what organisers describe as a worrying decline in reading enjoyment among children and young people, something we addressed on this station last year. Shockingly to me, just one in three 8 to 18-year-olds say they enjoy reading in their spare time. One in three. Let's turn to Sir Michael Morpurgo, who's best-selling author, former Children's Laureate, and who is backing this year of reading and joins me now. If, as I was to ask you, a man as distinguished as yourself, Sir Michael, to explain the joys of reading, I always say it is the best movie you will ever see because you make the movie in your mind. And even Spielberg couldn't make a movie the way we can in all of our minds. How would you sell reading to people, Sir Michael? Good morning.
Good morning. Lovely to speak to you, Nick. And bravo for the campaign last year. Every bit helps. How would I do it? It's very personal. I mean, what brings me alive and brought me alive as a child were stories. It's really simple as that. Living in other worlds, going other places, meeting other people. And you can do this in books. And you know underneath all that, and I learned it as a teacher and I probably knew it as a parent as well, that not only is it really enjoyable because you lose yourself in it, you join whoever it is in the story. And the last person to do that was the person who wrote it. You and the writer come together to make this magic thing happen in your head. It's the most extraordinary. It is magic. It really is magic that you can see a story in your head. You can hear the voices. You can know the people. You can fear for them. You can love for them. You can be excited by the whole thing. And I think it's that sort of leap of imagination which we can all do, which if you don't have, you miss the leap into two really important things. One is knowledge, and the other is understanding. And books feed you both those things without you even knowing it. So, for instance, if you're reading a book which is about an island on the other side of the world with the people who you've never met before, you widen your knowledge and understanding of the world just by being there. Yes, it might be fiction. It doesn't matter. What matters is you've been there. You've met them. You can see that there's much to enjoy and much to respect and maybe something to fear as well. And you learn about the Earth, you learn about the planet you live on so much. And the other thing which I think you miss out on is you meet other people like yourself, because we feel alone in this world very often. And with a book, you're never alone. You're with the writer and you're with lots of other people that you're meeting. So I think all those things, I know I've whittled on a bit, but there we are.
Can you remember when you were a lad, was there a specific book or a series of books that unleashed and unlocked their interest? Whenever I talk about this, I refer my listeners to either the Just William or the William series, which I absolutely devoured, and also the Jennings series, which I just found hugely entertaining, Jennings at School. Is there a particular series that you remember, Sir Michael?
Well, there is, and it was funny enough, it's a series of books which I wasn't allowed to read. That helped too. Where I was at my horrible little school, and at home, actually, I was not allowed to read Enid Blyton. It was thought to be in some way bad for me. I think it was because it was too enjoyable. And when you read an Enid Blyton book, it was like eating chocolates. You just wanted more and more and more. And you turn the page and you turn the page. And I suppose it was that business of it being secret, being personal to me, a torture under the bed.
Yep.
I really loved all that. So Enid Blyton started me. I'm not saying she's the greatest writer in the world, but she's an unbelievably good storyteller for young people. And then I took a big step. By good luck, and found a book called Treasure Island by one of the great writers of this world, Robert Louis Stevenson. And I then discovered that there's more to it than just excitement, that a character is nuanced, that there's a real life there. It's not just entertainment. And then he became and is still my favourite writer.
Someone listening now, lastly, who has listened to you, who is aware of the government campaign, looks at other characters such as yourself, bit literary characters who are urging, and thinking, you know what, maybe these people are right. I need to start reading a book to my child or my children tonight. I need to go to the library or go to a bookshop or what. I need to get some books. I always say, as early at the entry point, Richard Crompton, William, was it Anthony Buckeridge wrote Jennings? I can't remember. I think it was Anthony Buckeridge.
Yeah.
What would you say might be an entry point for someone who's listening now, a mum and or a dad who thinks, right, I'm actually going to give it a go. I'm going to get a book from the library. Where would you direct them, Sir Michael?
Well, you're right. You go to the library. And the first thing and really important is that this is not really a child thing. This is a society thing, this right. business of not reading as much, for obvious reasons, which we won't go into. But what is really important is that the adult, the mother, the father, the teacher, loves the books in the first place. Otherwise, you're not going to pass them on. You want your child to enjoy what you enjoy. So, yes, the library. And find a writer that you like. And until you found it, that's a bit difficult. But you experiment, and you find the writer you like, and then you go with that and go with that. And then the great thing is that when you do choose a book for your child to read them each night, and it should be every night, and it should be every day at school, the last hour at school, half an hour at least, should be story time. And if we do that, if there's a story every single day for children in all our schools, you would very, very quickly see a change in this, because they would catch fire with a teacher who wants to pass it on and who loves it. So I think that's the key, really. They've got to enjoy stories from someone they love and someone they respect.
Lastly, can I have a word on your latest book? I understand next month it's a retelling of Black Beauty. What's yes. behind that, Sir Michael?
Because I loved it when I was little. That and Treasure Island, my two favourite books. And I suddenly realised, it's over many years, that the language in those books doesn't work anymore for kids. And I thought, I don't want to miss out on this story. So I've retold it, not brought it up to date. It's still the story set when it's told by a horse, which is remarkable. But I told it in a language which I hope they would find more easy to access, and they'd still get the story. So it's Black Beauty. Anna Sewell wrote it originally
yes.
to try to get us to think harder about how we treat animals. And I think that's rather important to us today. So it's a book that's relevant to today as well.
Really enjoyed our time together. Thanks, Sir Michael. Happy New Year to you, sir, because I doubt if I'll see you again soon. So let's wish you that now. Sir Michael Mapurgo, best-selling author, former children's laureate, of course, probably, can I argue, best known for War Horse, but there's also The Butterfly Line. There's 150 books, actually, if not more, that he's written, and that new one coming out next month. This is what you're saying on the emails. This comes in from Simon. My girls are 7. One of them loves reading. The other one struggles a little bit, but still enjoys it. But they got bought the Harry Potter books. My wife and I love reading it to them as a family. Here's an interesting idea from Andy. I've never thought of this before. And you might be right, because whenever we talk about reading, people get involved, Andy. If you love radio, you will love reading. Stimulation for the imagination. Interesting. All right, we're going to be talking trains. Jason, I hope you can hold, because you're going to tell me anything about train services in other parts of the country. That's as they try and unlock the great north of England. Spending just £1 billion initially, I know it's a fortune, but if you're going to build all those railway lines and nothing actually happening until the 2030s, and also story broken within the last half hour or so.
It wasn't us, it was AI, says West Mids Police's chief after citing a football match that didn't exist to ban Maccabi fans. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the latest news headlines at 9:30. From Dominic Ellis.
The Chief Constable of West Midlands Police has admitted AI was used in a report that led to Maccabi Tel Aviv fans being banned from a football match last year. Craig Guildford's apologised for giving MPs what he calls erroneous evidence about the decision. A cabinet minister has denied the government has U-turned after abandoning plans for digital ID cards. Heidi Alexander's told Nick that claims that Labour has reversed on 13 policies is political mischief from opposition parties. And initial plans are being revealed to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for the project. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. Why? Because when you're working in a growing business, complexity
grows too.
So new QuickBooks AI gives you real-time cash flow visibility
to make the most of opportunities. It's amazing.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Find me somebody to love.
Hey, Beds, wake up. The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on.
Sorry, I'm just so comfy.
I bet you are. There's up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses. So shop now and save big. Dreams. Love your bed.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's talk trains with Jason, who's in the Algarve. Right, tell me all about trains in the... Do you live there all the time now then, Jason?
No. I was over here a few years ago and I left some clothes here and I came to pick them up.
What, after a few years?
Well, I had some nice shoes in the suitcase.
Oh, okay. So you've gone back to collect your shoes?
Yeah.
And they've been there for a few years?
They've been in my friend's house.
Right, okay.
There's a couple of pairs of Lokes, and the Ryanair flight was cheaper than me replacing the shoes.
Lokes come in at, a couple of £100 each? I don't mean each shoe, a pair, don't they? £200, something like that? A
bit more than that.
Three?
A little bit more than that.
Four?
Yeah.
So you've got nearly £1,000... Well, it was worth getting a plane to the Algarve, then, to get your shoes.
I know.
Wow.
Yes. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
I came to Faro Airport... Barrow to Sils is 63 kilometres.
Right.
I got on a train. The train was on time.
Yep.
Arrived on time.
Yep.
63 kilometres, and it was €5.85.
Oh, my God, which is probably about £4.90 or something like that. Less than a
£4. Yeah, I mean, it cost me the same to go from my house in Edgware to the stops and back.
You got a seat?
Sorry, I got a seat, yep.
Train was on time, train was clean.
Train was on time, it was clean, it wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't the most beautiful train in the world, but it got me there on time, padded seat, enough room for a suitcase to bring my stuff back.
Right.
And it was a fiver.
How often do you use trains in the UK, or in what used to be called intercity, trains that take you out of London in the UK, Jason?
I use the Thames Link a lot, but I tend to go in from Mill Hill to London, and the return is £16.
Well, I think connectivity in London and the South is pretty good, but the cost, the cost of some of the
cost
trains...
is astronomical in the UK.
Yeah. You sound a rational bloke, and you know the value of money. Do you honestly think these rail lines are ever going to be built in the North? They're not talking about 2030 before any spades go in the ground.
No.
So why are they saying it?
Well, they would like... I think that they would like to do it, but I don't think that there is... the management level expertise or the ability to bring projects in on time and on budget.
It's not impressive, is it? And there's the track record we talked about, HS2. Are you coming... are you back yet? Are you still in Portugal now?
No, I'll be back next week.
All right, happy landings when you come back. And I don't think I've ever spoken to someone, but it's very impressive to come back to Portugal and get his shoes from a mate's house. But the point Jason makes is a good one. If you look at our history... of trains, it's not particularly impressive, is it? I remind you, HS2, meant to have started 2017, operational this year, costing £33 billion. Currently, £80 billion sunk, started in 2019. The first train, is scheduled for 2033, if you believe that is going to happen. Chris is going to talk to you about reading, and hopefully the joy of reading, in a moment. But let's pick up on a story that broke around half an hour ago. And pressure building, you would think it's almost to an unsustainable point now for the Chief Constable of West Midlands Police, the one caught up in that row over misleading MPs over the use of AI. LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike brings us up to speed with all the latest details. George, morning.
Nick, good morning. Well, the latest development here is a letter from the Chief Constable sent on Monday to MPs to apologise for giving them evidence about a football match that never actually existed. They'd included erroneous evidence about a game between Maccabi Tel Aviv and West Ham in a report to the Birmingham City Council Safety Advisory Group, or the SAG as we have become used to hearing it called, to decide whether they should prevent supporters from attending the game at Villa Park. We now know that the reason for this mistake was because of an AI or artificial intelligence program called Microsoft Copilot. And whilst offering a profound apology, Craig Guildford said his belief is that this was the case was honestly held and there was no intention to mislead the committee. We can actually have a listen to some of that evidence at last week's Home Affairs Select Committee now.
They would go to a system which has sort of reports, intelligence reports, that all the football officers use over the country of previous games. They didn't find any relevant information within the searches that they made for that, and then they basically googled, you know, when was the last time, and that's how the information came to be.
So Google AI. I'm being really candid here.
That they just did a Google search on that because they couldn't find it in the normal system. And as it transpires, as I've said, and make really clear, that information was wrong. And I've apologised.
We know that. We've gone through that. But why was your officer Google?
But we haven't routinely used AI.
So you can see there, Nick, there's a lot of chatter around AI going on. Now, separately to that, we are also told that there's going to be a statement in the House of Commons later on today from the Home Secretary after she received a report from His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary, Fire and Rescue Services. That's the same body that inspects all police forces across the country. But this was an urgent inquiry as to how this evidence and decision was reached by the police force. And we've also heard from the Police and Crime Commissioner for the West Midlands, Simon Foster, who said to be pretty unhappy. He feels that MPs have been briefing against the Chief Constable, Craig Guildford, suggesting he should be ousted, despite the fact that the inquiries hadn't all come back yet. And he said that actually, you know, you need to remember that this is a decision in the West Midlands and these inquiries are taking place in Westminster. So really, Nick, it's all still very much up in the air.
LBC's reporter in the Midlands, George Ike, reporting. And this is another example. Chris, I will come to you to talk about reading justice, but around this time yesterday, if you recall, we were talking about the school where the teachers successfully lobbied to ensure that a Jewish MP could not visit a school in his own constituency. And this is another example of this discrimination that is being suffered by Jewish people in this country almost on a daily basis. Be in no doubt, the decision by West Midlands Force to ban the fans from that team, that Maccabi Tel Aviv team, showed how the hardline elements in the Muslim community were able to drown out the concerns of Jewish people in that area. Be in no doubt, you cannot have a situation where a police force effectively says we cannot police a football match. And now, some of you were calling me yesterday saying, oh, it's because he was a member of the Friends of Israel that MP couldn't go. It's right, of course he shouldn't go to a school in his own constituency because he's a member of an organisation called Friends of Israel. Well, now, that same school, it has been revealed again by the Times, managed to successfully lobby the bosses to cancel a speaker from an Israeli tech firm. Members of the National Education Union, who did not respond to any contact when we asked them yesterday, warned opponents, don't mess with them because we're not here to play. So this is the same school. So this idea, oh, it's because he's a veteran. No. This is, call it what it is. This is anti-Semitism that is allowed, tolerated, and indulged by this particular school. The spurious argument that because you're a friend of Israel, you can't visit a school in your constituency. I mean, I was thinking about this afterwards. I am a member of the Christian Church. I'm confirmed in the Anglican Church. I repeat that. Does that mean I agree with everything the Archbishop of Canterbury says? No, of course it doesn't. I can be a friend of Israel and not agree with what Benjamin Netanyahu does. Can you not see the distinction? But back to this school. None of you, the callers who phoned yesterday, oh, it's absolutely justified. You can't dance on the head of a pin on this one now. Because the same school successfully lobbied. The school has a lot to answer here, doesn't it? Successfully lobbied. A speaker from an Israeli tech firm couldn't go there. I have to tell you, my friends, anti-Semitism is alive and very well currently in this country, and precious few are doing much about it. And coming back to that copper, I'm not suggesting he's an anti-Semite, by the way. I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting he's just not up to it. He deceived Parliament. He's delusional to think that he can stay in his job. Just, in the name of God, go, man. Let's talk about the joy of reading. Chris in Ipswich. Chris, were you a reader as a lad? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Morning. I was very lucky. I had a very good library near me. So
lovely.
I was always surrounded by books. And now my house is full of books, luckily. But unfortunately, my children don't pay them any heed, unfortunately.
Oh, no. So, are they sort of child-accessible books? Because I was very lucky, as I've said before, without boring everyone to death, my parents had they used to collect all sorts of things, but they collected loads of books, so they're the William books are around, and very accessible books for anyone to read. Are your books, you know, child-friendly, in a sense, Chris?
Yeah, so we've got the old-school classics, which some of them you're not supposed to read without a warning now, are you? Because they contain things that children shouldn't know and stuff. But they
I'm honestly not being deliberate. I'm stupid here. What are these books we're not meant to read these days? Just remind me.
You know, you've got old Tom's Cabin and things like that.
I'm with you. Got it.
But we've got some of the more recent ones. They've got all the Harry Potters. They've got the Just William books you were talking about. They love the Diary of the Wimpy Kid books up until the school introduced these reading challenges, and now reading's homework, Nick, so they don't want to do it.
Sorry, what's a reading... Bear in mind, my children were at school many, many years ago. What's a reading challenge? What's that then?
So around about year three, they have, like, a 20 challenges they have to complete over a year that relate to books.
Oh, right.
So they have to do, like, a poster, or they have to do an interview with one of the characters, or set the scene. It basically makes reading at home homework.
That's not the way to do it, is it?
No. And when we spoke to the school, because I saw it with my daughter, she suddenly turned up reading, and now my son's at the age, and he doesn't want to read anymore. We spoke to the school...
How old is your son?
He's eight.
Right, go on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spoke to the school, and they said, well, you know, it's part of the curriculum, they've got to do it, and they have to do a minimum of five, otherwise their reading score's impacted or something, so... reading's homework now, unfortunately.
Well, that's going to take the joy out of it, isn't it? Because,
yes,
you know, that's a bit like double physics or chemistry or learning verbs or whatever in French.
Yep. So it's completely turned him off. It completely turned his sister off. And, you know, hopefully we'll get them back into it later date. But, you know, that's part of the problem. I think they introduced it to get more people accessing books. But unfortunately, it's done the opposite.
What a shame. Good luck with trying to encourage them back. I mean, as Sir Michael Morpurgo said, he put it far more eloquently than I did, because it does transport you to other worlds. You have a friend in that you are working your way through the book with the author, the characters, you can hear their voices. I mean, he made reading come alive. Chris, thank you for that. Good luck with the kids. Anton in Croydon. Anton, talk to me about reading. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I used to read a lot as a kid. Did you?
I did, actually, yeah. So I started when I was, like, 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read Asterix and Obelix comics.
Oh, yes, yes.
and just having that passion for reading the comics kind of led me to read, you know, bigger novels. I tried to read White Hunter Black Heart.
Right.
When I was 10. I struggled. It was like a 500-page novel. But, again, it just got me passionate about reading.
Did you have siblings? Were your brothers and sisters equally engaged, or was it more just you?
Yeah, so I had a sister as well. She was quite equally engaged. Everyone just had a passion for reading back then.
Right.
Again, this was a while ago. This is when schools and libraries had big kind of selections of books that kids could read.
And what about, have you got children yet, or not on the horizon, or what's happening there?
So I've got 4 children.
Oh, wow.
My oldest is 15, my youngest is 9.
Okay.
And they consume content differently.
I know.
So I think to reach these younger children in this generation, you know, they're like apps, so they want bite-sized content, they want kind of quick things, so we need to...
I'm sure you're right, but how healthy is that?
Well, it's not healthy, but I think we need to think that, you know, we're in a different time now, we're in a different era, where people do consume things differently, so to get them into the books, we need to start on the platforms where they are now, I believe.
Well, and as Chris just said, to get them reading at school and not make it like homework. Anton, thank you. Someone else like me, the love of books. Jim says, I had a 10-minute walk to the library. Now it's 2 bus rides and I'm elderly. I'm so sorry, Jill, I misread that. I'm so sorry. Jill, I had a 10-minute walk to the library. Now it's 2 bus rides and I'm elderly. Guy in Lincolnshire, I think the reading initiative is a great one. I'd also add, as someone who goes paper blind reading a book, audiobooks are also a fabulous alternative. They are, of course. John in Sheffield, as a teacher, I'm dumbfounded as to how this has happened. It's bizarre. In my 20-plus years, I can't think of any example of nonsense. I think there's more going on, but as teachers, we very much encourage all debate. My kids are 15 and 12 are bookworms. My wife keeps telling me spending our money in Waterstones is money well spent. Well, there are other bookshops available. Coming up after the news, time to look back in fondness at... reminisce about something that feels like it was the day before yesterday. But on a TikTok craze, youngsters are going crazy for 2016. We'll explore the highlights, possibly for some of you the lowlights, of that year. 9:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The head of West Midlands Police has admitted that AI was used in a report that led to Maccabi Tel Aviv fans being banned from a football match last year. A cabinet minister has denied the government's U-turned after scrapping plans for digital ID cards. And plans have been revealed to build a new railway line between Manchester and Birmingham. LBC weather, cloud and light rain for the southeast, dry elsewhere, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M3 northbound. The motorway is closed from junction 4 at Camberley to 3 at Lightwater. It's after that lorry was on fire earlier. There are delays from about 2 miles before junction 4A at Farnborough. Surrounding routes are hardly moving at all, especially the A30 and the A331. Also, queues on the M25 clockwise up to junction 4 at Orpington, where a lorry's broken down. Also, a lorry's broken down on the A4 eastbound at Sutton Court Road in Chiswick. Those delays all the way back onto the M4 from the Heston services. The A127 is blocked eastbound, and this is at Rayleigh Weir. It's following an accident, and there are queues on the approach.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Watching events in Iran and concluding that something must be done is not the same as knowing what that something is. And should British doctors go to the front of the employment queue?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters!
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18+ GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14/1/26.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Live and love to the last breath. This January, fall in love with the passion, drama and heartbreak of the iconic opera that inspired Pretty Woman and Moulin Rouge. Experience the Royal Opera's grand production of La Traviata. from the 8th of January to the 17th of February at the Royal Opera House. Get great seats from just £23. Don't miss La Traviata. Book now at rbo.org.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk rail, the big initiative by the government. They're going to spend just north of £1 billion to explore how, not until the 2030s, they're going to spend tens of billion pounds to link up the great cities of the north. Kenny says, please stop bragging about train times to airports. Bristol Airport does not have a train station. You can imagine the parking rip-off. Robert tells us the Liverpool and Manchester Railway was the first public transport system on land that didn't use animals as a main or partial source of power, only steam trains. The railway was the first to carry mail, the first to have a signalling system, and the first to be fully timetabled. Well, you find things out. Peter's in Northumberland. What do you want to say to this, Peter? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm an engineer, and I've developed an urban transport system.
Oh, wow.
And called BCAR, for which I have a memorandum of understanding with the Dubai Roads and Transport Authority.
Wow. That's exciting.
But the point I want to make is that the government's politicians are very much about popularity.
Mm-hmm.
And rail is, it's either got to be rail or buses. They don't look at new technology. They don't use the resources they have. There's an office in the Department for Transport called the Chief Engineer's Office.
Yeah.
That actually provide advice on what the best systems are they can use for reinstating railways and new transport systems.
All I would say is a train can carry hundreds and hundreds of people. The system that you're developing, can that take hundreds of people?
It can take thousands of people, twice the capacity.
What is it then?
Just in a system.
It's like trams, is it?
Yes, but it's not a long distance system like a railway is.
That's surely where the benefit of moving loads of people from London to Manchester or from York to Sheffield works, in a way that yours couldn't. No,
it does work, but it has to be complementary because you have to move those people from the stations around the towns and the cities when they get off at the end of the journey to continue with their journey.
Okay.
But the point I'm making is that the politicians are... HS2 is a good example where they didn't specify the system properly before they started to plan it and build it.
I hear what you say. Good luck with your project. Let us know how you get on. Now, I learnt yesterday that there's a TikTok craze, particularly among Gen Zers and millennials, as they look back on one particular year.
I live my day as if it was the last. Live my day as if it was no past. Doing
fucking around if we still. That's Zara Larsson, Lush Life, which currently is now back in the top 10. So what else happened in this year? Well, here's a clue.
Premier League champions 2016, the amazing Leicester City.
Claudio Ranieri and Captain Morgan, Wes Morgan, lifting the trophy. Oh, that year. Also,
the decision taken in 1975 by this country to join the common market has been reversed by this referendum to leave the EU.
And
we're going to get to work immediately for the American people. And we're going to be doing a job that hopefully you will be so proud of your president. You'll be so proud.
Yes, the first incarnation of President Donald J. Trump. And through public demand, we're going to play, well, all right, mine, the one of those clips again.
Premier League champions 2016, the amazing Leicester City.
As I said, they celebrate now when they get a throw-in, so let's remember those glorious days of 2016. But why? Why young people looking back to that time? Dr. Marion Trems is a clinical psychologist, hosts the Aspiring Psychologist podcast, and joins me now. So one of my colleagues, who I think is a Gen Zer, I'm being nodded at, yeah, Gen Zer, said it's really the first year that she can kind of really have any memories about. Do you think there's some sense to that, Marion? Morning.
Hi to you and the team and everyone listening. Yeah, I think so. It's really powerful, isn't it, being able to look back a whole decade. And I think
look back nearly half a century, certainly a quarter of a century.
I know, but I think it's the chunks, isn't it? So you can look back, I think there's something around the turn of the year, so it's like, do you type 2016, 2006? For me, I was being nostalgic about 1996, which is probably like, you know, my teenage pre-GCSE years. And it's just really powerful, a whole 10-year chunk can really compare and contrast to where we're at right now, I think.
Is it healthy?
I think it can be. I think it can be. So we don't want to necessarily get lost in that compare and contrast. But it can be like, oh, look at this time where I actually had lots of things I was enjoying, people who surrounded me with love and fun, and maybe I can have that again. And you can also, what I really love about a little bit of time travel is you can jump back in to happier times to help you with the now if things are feeling tricky.
Also, though, isn't there a sense that some of the memories, a lot of people are concerned about Trump, a lot of people are concerned about Brexit, they can be a little unsettling?
Yeah, yeah, they absolutely can. But I think we do go back to previous times when things feel uncertain. So maybe if things are feeling uncertain now, we're looking for where it all started. And maybe this was the start of the kind of political instability and people thinking, what on earth is going on? I woke up on the 24th of June, which was the day my second child was born, which was the date that Brexit result was announced.
Oh,
so
right.
I thought, What world is he being born into? This is wild.
And here we are all those years on. Marion, thank you for your time. Dr. Marion Trent, you are a clinical psychologist. You host the Aspiring Psychologist podcast. I'll end there, Marion, because I'm going to get one caller in about hopefully the joy of reading. Jerry's in Aldershot. Jerry, we're talking about your daughter. Is that right? Good morning.
Yes, that's right. She could read the newspaper at 4.
Oh, my goodness. Which one?
Yes.
Which newspaper?
Don't ask me. I don't remember that back. She's 40 now.
She's 40. And Did she take to it immediately? Did you have lots of books around? Yes, and what about when you were a girl? How did you sort of get on?
Can I tell you how I did it? I had a freezer on the top of her bedroom with the alphabet on, with little animals and things.
Yep.
And I used to go underneath, you know, A sounds like, B sounds like.
Yeah.
But what I did, which is slightly older... I would read by her bed. She was in bed, and I sit on the edge of the bed.
Yeah.
And I would, as I was reading, I would put my finger underneath each line. And
right.
When I got to say A and...
Yeah.
A and E and but, I'd say it's an and, that's a but. And so she knew and but before anything else.
Mm.
And I found that, well, as I say, she could read
yeah.
the newspaper at 4.
And has she gone on to have children?
She just had a baby now, a little bit on the late side.
No, that's fantastic. You must be very excited about. Do you think she will try and encourage her? Sorry, is it a boy or girl, your grandchild?
A little boy, 5 months old.
Congratulations, you must be very... Is it your first grandchild?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, you must be... So, what a Christmas you had then. My
goodness. I know, it's
goodness.
Fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, well done, congratulations. Do you think she will be... equally encouraging and perhaps do the same idea of that freeze around the top of the bedroom? Have you talked to her about it?
I haven't talked to her about it at the moment, no. But I know she will be very, very keen because she's a keen reader.
Lastly, were you a keen, as a girl now, taking you back to your childhood, how keen a reader were you?
Very much so.
What do you remember reading? What were the books that you got into?
No, I can't.
You can't now? All right, don't worry. Go back to those days of the freeze with the lovely around the bedroom wall of your child. And good luck with your grandson. Very exciting times for you, Jerry. That's it for today. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC, put the news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's going to be the other side of the news here on LBC, and I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it's difficult, isn't it? And in fact, the more obscene the news from Iran becomes, the more difficult the thing I'm about to describe becomes. The sense that the West has to do something. There's a rather good piece by Ben Wallace in one of the newspapers today that simultaneously makes an incredibly strong case for intervention, while also making it crystal clear how hard and potentially fractious intervention by the West, and remember it's a West led by the supremely incompetent and unsuitable Donald Trump, would be. So how do you police the tension between feeling that we must do something and not knowing what that something is?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the head of West Midlands Police has admitted AI was used to justify banning Maccabi Tel Aviv football fans from a game at Aston Villa last year. An intelligence report that led to that decision referred to a game that never actually happened. Craig Guildford has now issued an apology to MPs for evidence that he gave last week. LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike is following developments.
They'd included erroneous evidence about a game between Maccabi Tel Aviv and West Ham in a report to the Birmingham City Council's Safety Advisory Group to decide whether they should prevent supporters from attending the game at Villa Park. We now know that the reason for this mistake was because of an AI program called Microsoft Copilot. And whilst offering a profound apology, Craig Guildford said his belief is that there was no intention to mislead the committee.
Iran's top judge has suggested people held over the anti-regime protests there could be executed. It's despite Donald Trump's warning that he will take very strong action if that happens. The government has dropped plans requiring people to sign up to its own digital ID system to prove they can work in the UK. Ministers now say other forms of ID, like biometric passports, will be accepted when it becomes mandatory. The Conservatives have branded it spineless, saying it's Labour's 13th U-turn since coming to power. Shadow Foreign Secretary Priti Patel has told LBC it's embarrassing.
Well, they claimed that the digital ID was going to stop the boats, if you recall, and stop people smugglers and all this kind of stuff. We have laws in place already, and the only thing that will stop that now is effectively a strong deterrent to stop illegal migrants from coming to our country. It just shows what a shambolic government we have. They just make these spurious announcements without any detail. By the way, that proposal for digital ID was going to cost £1.8 billion. I mean, the totals just keep on racking up.
The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, has denied that it's a U-turn, saying claims that it is are political mischief from opposition parties. Plans have been revealed to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but the government has given no timescale for the project. And the Chancellor has confirmed that pubs will receive more temporary support on business rates. Landlords have raised concerns over the upcoming increase detailed in the budget. Rachel Reeves has said that an announcement will be made in the next few days and weeks. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 21 at 10,159. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather cloudy with patchy rain for the southeast today, dry and breezy elsewhere with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sounds like Arjun is going to wake up feeling fresh. And it's a good job. Because he's got a big presentation to nail just down the road. Get better sleep for your money. Book your next workstay at Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. The time is 3 minutes after ten, and the focus of the world, for good or for ill, is currently directed towards Iran, or at least the focus of our world, of the world in the West that is interested in current affairs and geopolitics. And I don't know what confidence felt like. Did we used to have confidence? Do you remember Robin Cook, Foreign Secretary in Tony Blair's first government, and his determination to institute something called an ethical foreign policy? Does this happen to you? Do you get haunted by things, thoughts, ideas that you don't think about for years, and then they come back round again and sort of slap you in the chops like a wet fish? Robin Cook, a fascinating politician. I did it with resignation, was on a point of inviolable principle as well, I think. But it was this determination to introduce an ethical foreign policy, a bridge, if you like, between the often absurd idealism of what is sometimes unfairly referred to as the far left, many of whom, of course, remain supportive of the hideous regime in Iran, and the pragmatic left, those who recognise that you can't do anything unless you achieve power. Although Keir Starmer currently establishing a third branch of Labour ideology where you achieve power and then do nothing. Historically, you have the idealists who don't care about power. They care only about ideological purity and the delicious aroma of their own flatulence. And then you have the pragmatists. Robin Cook, I think, tried to build a bridge between the two when he talked about an ethical foreign policy. So you can't stop. You can't defy gravity. And less so now, but certainly in his pomp, the West sat atop the world order. And that is a fact of gravity. So if an oppressive, a repellent regime were to be overthrown, then it would almost always involve Western intervention. But Robin Cook dreamed of a world in which that intervention would be ethical. I don't know what that means. I mentioned to you at the beginning of the week that I'm somewhat baffled to find my opinions becoming less pungent on many issues as I get older instead of more pungent. The tradition seems to be that you become more certain of things as you get older and possibly less thoughtful, but possibly we're starting a little fight back against that tradition on this programme. But the notion of an ethical foreign policy popped into my mind this morning when I found myself, shall we say, contemplating the unlikelihood of Donald Trump accidentally doing something good for the world. So Donald Trump now telling Iranian rebels who are being murdered both judicially and extrajudicially. By that, I suppose I mean extrajudicially means being shot dead on the street, and judicially means being hanged for protesting, which is scheduled to begin today with a protester called Irfan Soltani, who is to be killed for peaceful protest. And you have Donald Trump promising that help is on the way. So the help is being offered by the head of an administration that looks increasingly envious of regimes that are free to brutalize and even kill their own members and their own civilians should they have the audacity to dissent or to protest. Punishing people who are telling the truth, of course, is becoming a bit of a hallmark of Trump's regime. But we are still happily a long way from a world in which there are any really meaningful or deep parallels to be drawn between Washington and Tehran, Trump's Washington and the Ayatollah's Tehran. So there's a strange thing that happens at moments like this. I don't know what it felt like at the time. Do you remember what it felt like when George W. Bush essentially set his sights on Saddam Hussein? They talked about the axis of evil. Were we paying proper attention then? Did we all buy into the idea that invading Iraq was somehow payback for September the 11th, despite the fact that Saddam Hussein had had nothing to do with September the 11th? Al-Qaeda hiding out in the Hindu Kush, led by Osama bin Laden, a Saudi, who would have found much of what Saddam Hussein represented repellent. Was that what took hold? Back then, I was just coming out of a career as a showbiz journalist, so I wasn't paying quite as much attention to the geopolitics as I as expected and keen to do now. But did we all buy in subconsciously to the idea? Was the propaganda machine? Robin Cook resigned, to go back to his memory, I'm pretty sure, over the thing that I'm now trying to recall. I think he resigned on a point of principle over the unjustifiable nature of that war in Iraq, and yet on we went. Did we buy that subconsciously, or did we just somewhat xenophobically think that all Middle Eastern people or all Middle Eastern Muslims must be the same, and therefore if we can't go after the people who actually did September the 11th or masterminded it, then let's just go after some others that we don't like the look of? Why Iraq? On whose side we had been, or in whose support we had been full-throated during the Iran-Iraq war just a few years previously. So